FAI may go for a short-term Kenny contract. If I was Stephen Kenny, they'd come and say, oh, we'll give you a contract for two more games. I'd be like, nope, nope. Find a new manager, lads. Off you go. Go on, find a new manager and see what happens.
OTB AM, live, weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
Yes, indeed. 7:30, Friday morning. Welcome along to OTBAM. Owen, how are you getting on?
Good, Adrian. How are you?
How's the moustache treating you?
Yeah, very well. Very well. Compliments left, right and centre. So I'll be
really
sad to see this month go.
Wow. I find that most people don't get to see it because of the masks.
Yeah, well, you gotta let that moustache breathe every so often.
I started watching Joe Exotic during the week and I suddenly realised it's Joe Exotic.
That's the Tiger King.
Yeah.
Is there not a spin-off called Joe Exotic or anything like that, is there?
No, it's Tiger King 2.
Oh, is Tiger King 2 out?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was coming next year or something.
No, no, no. It started, came back on new streaming of it again on maybe Wednesday night.
Oh, right. I didn't know it was out now. Okay.
It's only all right. It's only all right. Like, the thing is, it was one of the, obviously, splashes of lockdown, and it was so, it was such a mad programme. We started, like, what? And there's all these new little wrinkles about characters that were in it, or, you know, characters that had been, like, had disappeared or whatever.
So they held stuff back in Tiger King 1
I think they've found new stuff. Yeah. Carol Baskin. It's hard to only utter the words. I'm like really restraining myself now to only utter the words Carol Baskin without the words that should normally follow.
Killed her husband, whacked him.
No, but like, you know, Joe Exotic's like, he has a slightly different title for Carol Baskin than most other people would.
Yeah.
But you're
looking quite exotic and Joe Exotic, so congratulations on the facial.
There's a whole new wrinkle on Carol Baskin. I mean, you didn't tune in for a Joe Exotic review this morning, but that's what you're getting. So yeah, loads of good stuff coming up on the show today. It did strike me, Owen, the last couple of minutes, that we were going to talk to Phil Thompson a bit later on about the Arsenal-Liverpool game, and normally we'd be here sort of having a bit of a jibe at you about how shy Arsenal are, and actually at the minute things are going grand. Like, you're waiting for the international break to be over to, you know, get knee deep into Arsenal again.
Who is it, the author that carried in the Irish Independent this morning from the Telegraph? Forgive me for not remembering his name, but he makes the point that Arsenal are exactly that they are the butt of everybody's joke, and as a result of them being okay over the last couple of weeks, they've kind of faded into the background completely. As their form has picked up, the talk about Arsenal has just disappeared because they're good at football again, and their brand is being hilariously bad at football or underperforming and finding ways of being average at very best. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It is very strange that people aren't taking the mick out of Arsenal, and as a result, they're not really John Percy, is it? Sam Dean is making that point, and I'd agree with him that is the existence of Arsenal Football Club.
Have a shout tomorrow.
I wouldn't, like, if we're in the game, I wouldn't say so. Like, I think that there's been, so if you take the Premier League table from the start of September, Arsenal would have been top. They have the youngest squad, they have the youngest manager, and all those three things paint a picture of progress, and a very, very encouraging one at that. But the thing is that Anfield has been a horrible, horrible place for Arsenal over the last couple of years, a humiliating place, pretty much. And on every occasion they visited there over the last 5 years, 18-4 is the aggregate scoreline of the last five fixtures at Anfield. They haven't won at there since 2012. I would be surprised if it happened this weekend, but you could still hold out hope for a draw on this front, given Liverpool's potential defensive frailties. We'll see how that goes over the season, but certainly the thought process is that once Van Dijk gets back to his best, we will start to see a more solid Liverpool. Of course, a lot of their fans are questioning their fullbacks at the moment, and in particular Andy Robertson after his performance before the international break. So maybe it goes well beyond the returning Van Dijk. So you're looking at that defence and you're saying Arsenal can score against them, but to win at Anfield would be a huge statement from Arteta, which I don't think this team is ready to take yet.
Well, we'll see. Top four inside zone. We'll see. We'll talk to Phil Thompson a bit later on. Obviously, the team for the Ireland team for the Argentina game is going to be named a little bit later on today. And as always on a Friday morning, there's plenty of speculation about exactly what that team is going to look like. And rather disappointingly, I have to say, it doesn't look like he's going to make that much change. I was thinking about it yesterday and just thinking what an unbelievable opportunity it is to shuffle the deck in a way that really at international, we talk about this every single time. At that level, it's rare that you get the opportunity to mess around with your team and have a look at some of the options and give experience to players who don't have it. And as I said, rather disappointingly, if the papers this morning are anything to go by, and normally they're a pretty good indicator, it looks like it's going to be business as usual from the New Zealand game, other than the changes he has to make, which are in the halfbacks, particularly around the pack. we don't need to see much more. I mean, I would understand, you know, leaving Andrew Porter in it because he's switched back positions, still sort of getting the caps under the belt to get that level of experience. But why can't we have a look at the likes of Coombs or Baird or Sheehan? I just think it, like, it's also a bit of a shot to nothing in that you get totally forgiven if it backfires and we get beaten, because everybody will go, well, look, we won the important one. We've blooded a pile of new players. It's win-win. I just, could we not have a bit of a look beyond what we already know?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Like, maybe, like, I don't think you can even make the case that there's like a sense of cohesion that needs to be stoked in that front row, for example, considering they're all going to be playing together for Leinster over the course of the season. I do think that when you're talking about Porter there, I think you can show maybe Ronan Kelleher into that same mix as well, where it's like you'd like to see just a few more caps in that position, in Ronan Kelleher's case, in any position in Ireland over the next little while. So I can see that Furlong probably deserves a break. But then again, when you're looking at the possible replacements for anyone in that front row, the drop between Furlong and the next man up is obviously the biggest. So yeah. I can kind of see why they've arrived at that eventuality. Like, the back row is obviously where Ireland have been stocked with talent for so long at this point, and you could easily see them making a number of changes which wouldn't drop the standard at all.
And also, if you are one of those players, are you not going, oh my god, I'm not going to be starting against Argentina? What hope, if you're Gavin Coombs this morning reading the papers, I'm sure they already know the team, are you not just thinking, what hope have I ever got to get into the team? And also, like, Conor Murray is class. Everybody knows it. He's Lions captain, you know, incredible career, and we all know what he's about. Would you not just stick Craig Casey in and let's have a look? Like, I mean, I just think that even with the enforced changes, it's pretty much Carberry. I would totally understand it. It seems like that'd be the combination, Carberry and Murray. Totally get that. I just think for those positions where we could have had a look at a few players that we don't know much about, like, what's the point in putting Peter Manley, for example? Looks like he might be on the bench again. Like, we know what he's about, and he's not going anywhere, and he'll still be part of the plans come the Six Nations. Could we not just have an old gander at the rest?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's definitely, it would be exciting if they managed to have to mix up the squad significantly and still get the job done against Argentina at the weekend. There's obviously just this real appreciation that there was a lot of, to use this terrible phrase, work-ons at the moment. This doesn't look like the finished article, because if it was, and they're pretty happy with what they've seen so far in this window, then we would see wholesale changes tomorrow. But clearly they want to work on more, and they want to see something different and something more from a team that's similar to the one that played last week. Maybe in the context of Murray, and obviously I don't think anybody's arguing about Carberry. I think everybody wants to see him play from the start. Maybe it's just fair to give a halfback a crack when they've got close to your first choice pack starting, and it's not fair to judge a scrum half maybe if you're under the cosh completely up front for the whole game. But then I think you could fairly make the case that they wouldn't be under the cosh if Baird and Coombs came in. I think they were pretty outstanding young players who would do well to hold up, and from their point of view as well, it does seem that like, I don't overly disagree with playing a strong team, by the way, but if you were to be devil's advocate to it, when you bring in these young players, it sometimes seems that it's like against Japan in the summer. And they're all brought in one tranche, whereas actually bringing one or two of them in to a pack where they're playing against the tried and trusted is a great way for them to actually...
Are you saying that what's there at the minute is plenty of change, as in Porter?
No, I'm saying like maybe one or two more. I think it's quite close is what I would think. I would say that maybe one or two more changes would have been perfect for this weekend.
I agree. It looks like Balakoon will be the only one that's really brought in some sort of a tactical switch of introducing a player, which is great. Good to see, but like, just like, see a bit more.
So. Yeah, like even one more in the pack, like you'd be okay with. But like, you want them playing with the players who are going to be the starters at the World Cup in a couple of years. And realistically, there isn't going to be a whole pile of change if everybody's fit between now and then in that pack.
Interesting to see some of the commentary afterwards, and picked up on as well during the week. Sexton, I think, particularly talking about it afterwards, about how the mental bit last weekend was the bit that where before they might have sort of packed up and, well, this game's kind of going against us, a bit of a forward pass here or there. But actually, the mental thing is something they've worked on, and I know Gary Keegan's been doing a lot of work with them, and that's the one of the biggest exciting bits outside of the win last weekend. And Ronan O'Gara writes very eloquently again this morning in the Examiner about how New Zealand media has been dominated again this week, as you can imagine, about like chat about Ian Foster and like, you know, what's happening with the All Blacks, you know what I mean? Like, it's obviously tends to be very catastrophic after that, but certainly from an Irish point of view, it's very exciting. You were reading a piece with Rory O'Connor in The Independent as well about the profile of the team and how it differs from, it's not a good reflection of Irish society in a way that the soccer team is.
It's not a full reflection of Irish society, that's for sure. It never really has been, though, has it? And it's certainly changed over the last little while, where the private schools are more influential and are creating this unbelievable conveyor belt of talents in Leinster, which, you know, is fantastic for Leinster, is obviously good for Ireland as well. He's just kind of gone through some of the figures there. If you look at the team against Japan, 11 players who went to private schools in Dublin, Wicklow and Kildare were on the starting team against Japan that day. It is undeniable, but it's a conversation we've had for quite some time. It's actually just kind of deeper into the piece that he just makes a very valid point that football has done a much better job of showcasing modern Irish society than rugby has. It's been, I would argue, one of the best angles of the Stephen Kenny era so far, is how it's coincided with a brilliant representation of the communities that exist in Ireland in modern society. That has not been replicated in the Irish rugby team. I would say, I mean, it's been great to, you know, have a South African or a New Zealand tint to the team, and that's been a great little kind of, I guess, subplot to where the Irish rugby team has gone over the last little while, regardless of your stance on it. But I still think there's a hell of a long way to go to actually get to a point where the football team is at the moment, where you're like, right, this is modern Ireland represented on the pitch. What we have is still elite Ireland on the pitch. There's no getting away from that. And even when it comes to your traditional Irish communities, I guess, and some of them are even dwindling when it comes to like the Munster-based players, obviously, and from elsewhere around the country. But this is not just a question of, you know, the private schools thing. It's a question of everything, really, and how well is rugby doing in terms of opening doors to everybody in this country, because it seems that it's something that we should all be going after, because everybody benefits if that's the outcome that, like, the football team have. They have clearly opened doors to a lot of people around the country, regardless of their socioeconomic background, for example.
Well, like, when you say it's not a private school thing, it feels to me like that's a large part of it, in that that's the system that's providing a load of the players that are in this team and that will continue to come into the teams, and not just around Dublin, by the way, around Leinster. I think that a lot of the provinces have been dominated that way, and you look at the profile, the diversity of our private school system, it's, if that's the route we're going to continue to have a lot of white Irish kids playing for Ireland. That's just, that is going to be a fact of life. So I mean, I guess the suggestion here is that, you know, the IRFU could do more to engage communities beyond that, because it isn't that long ago that, you know, that a lot of the teams were coming from the same geographical areas, never mind about any diverse split beyond that. So yeah. I don't know, it feels like there's a long old route to go if there were to, because also it's hailed as being so successful.
Well, yeah, and like, that's actually a good point, and Rory makes that point, that actually one of the best times to have a conversation about what any sport can be doing better is when a sport is in a good place, because otherwise maybe it comes across as moaning a little bit. But I suspect in a couple of years, without being too much of a downer, that we might be in a place where there might have been another bit of World Cup disappointment coming the way of Ireland, and conversations about how do we get more people playing rugby will come up. How do we get into different areas that haven't been touched by rugby at any point? That is the conversation we have every 4 years, and maybe it's actually a good one to be having right now, because Ireland have just beaten the All Blacks, rather than reacting to a defeat to the All Blacks or France or South Africa or Scotland or whoever it is in 2023.
So, Elite Ireland, Jesus Wept, OTB Virtue Signalling, says Martin Malone. Good morning to you, Martin.
What was that again?
No idea. One of us mentioned something to do with Elite Ireland. I don't know. As always, take the weird path there, Martin, rather than actually engaging in the overall conversation. We have Brian Fenton coming up on. You were chatting to him yesterday. He's had plenty to say for himself. This guy looks like he's still only a young buck, and we probably have another 10 years before he gets freed from the shackles of the great Dublin machine, and we actually, you know, hear the great breath of his wisdom. Actually, I've seen some stuff on TikTok where himself and his girlfriend have gone off and built, redone...
I mean, you could have told me this before we did the piece yesterday. That he's a TikTok star.
I do understand that now. They redesigned a... I feel like as if I'm the only one who knows this, but it's on TikTok, so I'm not breaching any confidence here. They went off and repurposed some sort of a van, old sort of COVID thing, into a sort of mobile unit, and been off out and about the country touring in it. And like,
he was telling me about this yesterday.
Oh, was he? Well, looks as if they... looks as if TikTok looks as if they did everything themselves.
Right, I didn't realise the TikTok element, but he said that he put a particular amount of work into that van on the day that Mayo and Tyrone happened to be going toe-to-toe in the All-Ireland football final, where he needed a bit of a distraction that day, to right. say the least, and just kind of kept half an eye on the score. But I wouldn't be, like you say, 10 years more in Brian Fenton than a tongue-in-cheek way. Could we perceivably see a 38-year-old Brian Fenton coming off the bench to be playing? I wouldn't put it past any of those Dublin footballers. Himself and Owen Murphy were out doing media yesterday, and it was... we'll have a piece with Murphy next week. We'll be pushing that out next week. But two great talkers. It's weird that you come away from a GAA event being like, do you know what? That was actually a good use of time. Like, and that's not a reflection of any other GAA players. I think it's actually just more of a reflection of the way GAA players are talking right now. I think things are getting better. It's come from a low base, but certainly when these players are pushed out there, you actually get good stuff, and they're willing to talk and are genuinely interesting people.
All right, speaking of genuinely interesting people, if you're a Martin Malone style of commenter, do keep the comments coming into us over the course of the morning. If you've anything sensible to say either, we'd love to hear from you as well. Quarter day, Friday morning, with you until 10 this morning. Here's a flavour of what's on the menu for you. That interview with Brian Fenton upcoming in just a couple of moments' time. Phil Thompson, Liverpool legend, will get his thoughts on Stevie G at Aston Villa, of course, and Liverpool Arsenal this weekend as well. Let you know what's happening across the back pages of the newspapers this morning at about 8:30. And after that, Alan Quinlan's going to look ahead to the weekend's rugby. We've Ireland-Japan at the RDS tomorrow, and then on Sunday Ireland-Argentina as well, and we'll get his thoughts on all of that. Enda Call has been crunching the numbers around the Republic of Ireland international team, and some pretty interesting stuff in there in terms of what Stephen Kenny has done over the last year or so, the last few years indeed, and Enda will bring us the outcome and the results and the opinions around his number crunching there. Live crappy quiz. It's myself versus Nathan versus Phil.
No, Tommy is replacing Nathan.
Oh, is that a late?
No, Nathan's just unavailable.
Oh, cried off.
Yeah, just hard to get sometimes.
Just sort of got sort of his nose rubbed into the mud a few times over the last few weeks. That does
must have done. Well. Yeah. Clearly there's some sort of beef going on here between myself and him.
The beef is real. And after that then, we're going to, you can see already what's going on here, but we're going to have an updated Mo ranking, all to do with Movember, of course, and Joe is going to do that first. Last week it was Owen in first place, me in second, and Ger in third. We'll see where that all stands after that, and then Rebecca Clancy from the show last night as well. So that's all coming your way over the course of the next hour and a little bit. You are watching OTB AM. We're live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's Mo. Right, we're going to talk to Phil Thompson, as I said, in just a little bit. Before all of that, Owen has been catching up with the Dublin star Brian Fenton. Take a look. OTB
AM. Okay, so Avonmore Protein Milk are teaming up with Dublin footballer Brian Fenton and Kilkenny hurler Owen Murphy to launch the new Avonmore Pro Oats product. Fenton and Murphy, who have 9 All-Ireland Championship medals between them, were representing the Gaelic Players Association, of whom, along with the GAA, Avonmore Protein Milk are a long-standing supporter. And as you can see, Brian Fenton is with us now. Brian, you're welcome back to the show. How are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm good on. Thanks, Minion. Thanks for having me. Your viewers are probably sick of seeing me, to be honest, but we're back again, thankfully.
I don't know about that. Like, I think this is the first time we've caught up since the summertime. How have the last few months been for you?
Yeah, very different, very different. You know, it's been a good few years prior to maybe this year for as a Dublin footballer, certainly in my career. We've been very, very fortunate and very successful. And that all came to a dramatic end this year, losing in the semi-final to Mayo, and deservedly so. But, you know, in many ways, no different to an off-season. You sort of use the off-season to take those opportunities to do stuff that you're not usually able to do. Trips abroad, experiences, concerts, rugby games, soccer games, you know, all of that stuff that in other worlds or in other times of the year, you probably have to forego and neglect. So in many ways, the same, but just very different in terms of the hype around the city, maybe.
So what did the off-season involve this year?
Loads, actually. So straight after the Mayo game, not straight after, about a week or so after, unplanned, sadly, I was over in Dubai, in a very hot Dubai. So went there for a week. And then since then, I've had a couple of trips. I was in London. I've been to Old Trafford in Manchester, just back from Cheltenham, feeling the effects of Cheltenham last week. So yeah, it's been great, you know. Ran into a couple of some of my mates, ran into Alex Ferguson, that sort of stuff. So just unbelievable stuff. Yeah, so a couple of trips. Was in the Aviva for the Ireland-Portugal game, fully back on the Ireland soccer bandwagon again. And just, you know, just having a good time, you know. And luckily the restrictions have been lifted. So working away and living away and dealing in the background with a Mayo loss in the semi-final.
Really. Yeah, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But did you get chatting to Ferguson?
No, I didn't. I missed him only. So my mate, right. You know, the only is a twist of fate, but we were leaving one venue to go to sort of another place in the Cheltenham breakdown, and they had to stop to finish their drink. So we're about 20 or 30 seconds behind us and ran into him. And by all accounts, very, very friendly, stopped for a picture and stuff. But it's just unbelievable. You know, you run into Gordon Elliott, some of the lads met a fella off Love Island the year previous. So like you see all sorts of people and just a great time. You know, the week before in Old Trafford, ran into Eamon Fitzmaurice and Paul Galvin in a bar in Manchester, you know, chatting away to them, drinking away with them. So just unbelievable. In any other walk of life, you'd never run into these people. And just very, very fortunate. And yeah, just loving life at the minute.
You were saying as well that you did a skydive when you were in the Middle East.
Sorry, yes. I was in Dubai. And one of the things I've always wanted to do, you know, in many people's bucket lists is a skydive. And it was over, like, you had two options, one to do it over the desert or one to do it over the Palm in Dubai, that sort of infamous thing. Myself and my girlfriend jumped out of a plane. I was the last to go, actually, thankfully, because I don't know what I've had the stones to go if I was first, because it's just raw. I don't know if you've ever done one, but you're literally up, you're sitting on this guy's lap. Will Smith does a great talk of it on YouTube if anyone wants to look at it. But you're literally sitting on this guy's lap and you're like sort of small talking away. And then all of a sudden, like literally a door flings open and literally like in 5 second intervals, you're gone. And one of the best experiences I've ever had in life. But at the same time, if I didn't have a little video that I shared on my Instagram, I probably wouldn't remember too much of it, to be honest, because you're just so hyped out. You're completely gone. You're just like in survival mode. But unbelievable experience and would highly recommend it and do it again and all that stuff.
Unreal. And is this something that you chase down quite a bit, that bit of a thrill? And is there like different various elements of a bucket list that, like, if it's certain itches that you have to scratch it, that you feel that you need to get moving on at this point in your life?
Yeah, I wouldn't be a massive adrenaline junkie. Like, right. You know, I always sort of drive within the speed limit and stuff like that. I'm not into fast cars, but like, you know, I love skiing and stuff like that. I love, so it's that, for example, skydiving. I love stuff that aren't the norm, if that makes sense. You know, very, very forced to do that. But I wouldn't be a massive junkie. Like, I'd always sort of stay within the limits of safety. Like, you know, when I went to the skydive, for example, I was sort of overlooking their safety procedures and making sure all the parachutes were tucked up nicely and, you know, they were tested and stuff. But no, just sort of, you know, once in a lifetime experiences, if it crosses my path, I'll jump on it, you know.
Well, good to see you got back in one piece from that. It's interesting that you did bring up the All-Ireland semi-final there. Like, is that something that you're still thinking about then, or is it something that you've kind of worked through and it's kind of in the rearview mirror at this point?
Yeah, both, I would say. It was certainly in the rearview mirror. Like, you sort of compartmentalize it, park it away maybe in the aftermath, and you sort of deal with it in your own way. But as you said, we're quite quickly into club games and stuff, so that sort of takes the focus, and then you're back working and all these sort of trips away, or you're going on them, and your sort of life is running away in itself. And then as the sort of conversation comes around now to being back with the team, I'm back with the lads, and sort of, you know, the talk of maybe training in later December and January, then you're sort of saying, oh, geez, and it sort of comes right back to the top of your thought process. And I haven't, you know, there's been no review period. We haven't looked at it just yet, but that will come, and we'll have to endure the pain of that. But as I was saying earlier on this morning, is, you know, I think we'll learn more from that than a victory, you know, there's no doubt about it. So we'll have to, as I said, just endure the pain of the review, but learn the lessons and hopefully bring them into our 2022 season.
What was the aftermath of that game like for you personally, given the unbelievable success that you've had and never actually tasting that feeling of defeat in championship before that night?
Yeah, it was funny. Certainly weird. Like, in the immediate aftermath was just the dressing room. Never experienced a dressing room like that, I think. And it would have been somewhat similar, maybe some of the draws that we had, just the deflation and not having maybe a cup in your dressing room. Do you know that sort of way? So maybe somewhat similar in some of the draws, but just the dressing room and the emotion and the disappointment in that immediateness of the game. And then after that, I suppose it's just not being part of the final and not being part of the build-up and the hype. And, you know, what do you do on a day of a final when you're usually playing? You know, that sort of way. So, you know, you sort of have to deal with it and you have to get on with it. And no point sulking about it too much. So, but no, look, only looking at the final, only fuels a fire and fuels a motivation to get back there, despite, as you say, success and having been there a few times. But it does nothing but drive and inspire for next year.
I can imagine. So, like, a lot of those great Kilkenny hurlers always said that losing a semi-final is much worse than losing a final. And as you say, it's not being part of that final. So what did All-Ireland final day look like for you then this year?
Yeah, it was pretty uneventful. Like Lazar asked me, did I watch the game? I didn't. I was out. I'm doing up a camper van and I was out doing nothing really, but doing bits on my camper van, painting and bits like that, and sort of dropping into the house to get things. And I'd had the eye, my housemate was looking at the final, and I sort of drop in, get the score, leave again. So very uneventful, probably turn the phone off on that day, but caught the last 10, 15 minutes of it and sort of caught the review of the game and you know, the breakdown of it. And undoubtedly Tyrone, very, very deserving of their victory. A very dangerous team, it seems, looking at it over the next few years with a great group of players and management. So just looking forward to the challenge that's going to bring. Even looking at the league, I only caught the league table there, for example, the other day. And the teams that are in Division 1 now are just such exciting games, exciting teams, offensive teams. Just dying to get back into it.
Would it be nice to have that league in the summer? I dare say the decision to do up the camper van on that particular day wasn't a coincidence, that you were trying to keep yourself busy that day.
Trying to keep myself busy would be accurate, yes. Whether it was a camper van or out walking the dog or out doing something, I would have been anywhere but in front of the TV. But you know, that's just, every player deals with it differently. I know some lads watched it, some didn't, some were abroad, some had no interest in it, you know, that sort of way. So just dealing with it differently. But as I said, congratulations to Tyrone, and you know, hopefully we'll meet them or Mayo or Kerry or whoever it may be next year. Looking forward to it.
And it's going to be fascinating as well, just what that does to the psychology of this Dublin team. Because as you say there, all of a sudden there's a point to prove. There was certainly no points to prove over the last 5-6 years when you were the undisputed kings of the country. Whereas now, having that little edge, that can't be bad for this team, surely.
No, exactly. I think you've said it there, Owen. I think for a long time we were the team with the target on our back. And now we're just one of many teams that are sort of looking over their shoulders at who's coming. So for us, I think if we had, say, hypothetically, if we'd won again last year, it just would have covered over cracks that a loss and the analysis of a loss and the learnings of a loss would bring. So I think, as I said earlier, you know, a loss from our point of view was unfortunately the best outcome in terms of refreshing players, refreshing management, refreshing drive and motivation. And you know, maybe even good for the city, you know, that sort of way. In many ways, you know, I was very lucky enough to bring Sam Maguire into my primary school for 5 or 6 years in a row. And at that stage, the kids were probably saying, well, look, you know, I see this every year, you know, and you know, that's what's different. Just give me homework off. That's all they wanted. So in many ways, next year will be, you know, everyone has gone a year without it. You know, it's like you always want what you can't have or what you haven't had for a long time. So I think it'll invigorate the city again, because, you know, maybe in many ways, 2015, 16, you know, 13, the hype around the city and in clubs and in kids and in fans was huge. Whereas with success, that in many ways, you know, not to blame anyone, but that can dwindle. And I think what losing will do for the city is, you know, well, maybe the fans will be more motivated and players will be more motivated and coaches will be, you know, extra motivated to bring us back to that, hopefully. And I think we certainly still have the panel to do it. We still have the team to do it. So we're excited.
Yeah, that's really interesting, that tone of excitement. And I think you mentioned the teams in Division 1 next year. I think there's like a real sense of excitement around what football is going to bring next year. You were in the middle of it this year, like which really felt like a staging post almost in the direction that football was going, that it was just really, it was a really good brand of football so much. Like, what was your own experience of the season as a whole?
It's great. I think my first 2 years when I came in, it was all about, you know, again, no one's fault, but it was all about very tactical, breaking down maybe mass defences. You talk about maybe Tyrone semi-final in 2017, for example. It was just a master tactical game. Whereas now, as you say yourself, there seems to be a return or a brand of offensive football, kicking, catching scores, you know, keepers coming up to play corner forward, all of this madness, you know. So it's just great. It's great. You know, there's sort of an element of back to basics, and it sort of drives you on as a player as well. Say, right, you know, you still have, let's get back to our basic skills and scores, because you know, you may have those opportunities over the next couple of years to be in more open positions. But no, it's exciting, as you say, that the whole trend in football now, even hopefully and thankfully in club games, you know, I think that whole defensive model was seeping into the club scene as well. But now there's sort of a return to offensive football. What's our best product, and let's produce that, and let's sort of master it.
With every sort of development in the game, there tends to be a reaction. So what would be your specific reaction, do you think? Maybe this could be a subconscious reaction as a midfielder, because the middle third has been a war zone all summer long. I mean, the three nominees for All-Stars are traditionally, Lee Keegan, technically a cornerback, mm-hmm. but like a halfback, and then obviously half forward for Tyrone as well. So being right in the middle of that middle third as well, how do you think you'll react to this style of football that's developing?
Yeah, it'll certainly change. And as I said, you'll see it. Like there's some defenders are outscoring their forward counterparts and their forward colleagues. And likewise, as much as they hate it, corner forwards are now back sort of one-on-one with their man, you know. So there just seems to be this constant motion around the place that'll sort of demand that you are mobile and that you're able to play almost in every position, you know. In many ways, historically, you were happy enough to stick in your zone and maybe creep forward, maybe get back to help. But now there's such fluidity that you sort of have to be a forward and you have to be a defender and you have to be good at everything. And as I said, the goalkeepers are more midfielders than anything else. You know, they're more forwards, they're more offensive threats. So it's great. It's exciting. And I think crowds love it and fans love it and pundits love it. And hopefully we'll see more of that next year.
One thing that came up this week was that Conor Glass was doing media, and he said that he models his game on your good self. He said that he's been watching video of you just to get that transition from AFL back to the league here, to the Championship here. Was that something you ever did at the start at all, actually modelling your game on someone? I know he's coming from a different perspective, changing sport, but it does seem that this is also a trend.
Yeah, I don't know. Jeez, I hope he learned. I don't know. Did he learn much? He would have had to look at a few more after me, I'd say. No doubt a tough scenario. And you look at the likes of maybe Conor McKenna as well, coming back from international or Aussie rules and coming back. And no doubt it's a different game with different skills. And you're so long without a Gaelic football, so I'm sure a transitional period. But I've been watching him in the distance at Derry games, and he's certainly no bother to him, like a duck to water again. So, to answer your question, from my own point of view, you're always trying to rob little nuggets from the best around, like, you know, the likes of Michael Murphy or the likes of Kieran Kilkenny or even David Clifford. You know, you're trying to rob little nuggets all the time and try different things in training that you've seen. But no more so than historically as a kid, who influences you? The likes of Kieran Whelan, the big badass gloves and the high field and big scores. And then you've sort of Daryl O'Shea, just refined box to box, and obviously the influence that he had on his Kerry team. So all of them, but like you could go through names forever and say, I want to be like them. But probably those two names. And then obviously the modern sort of players around you to try and keep your standards high and keep pushing them and improving yourself as well.
Just one last thing then, Brian, I kind of touched on it earlier on. It would have been nice if we had this Division 1 in the summer. What do you think should happen over the next couple of years, just with regards to the conversation that really became a national conversation on Proposal B and on Congress? What sort of format would you like to see over the next couple of years?
You know, you lads had the first big viral one during the debate or the week of. I don't know. And truth be told, I didn't know the ins and outs and the breakdown of this, the Proposal B. I didn't know the breakdown of this sixth team will get in, whereas this first team won't, or, you know, that sort of who would qualify. But I just know, you know, I spoke about it earlier, is I know that more games are good for teams and players. And the only thing I can describe it is, as a Dublin footballer, as we've sort of spoken about, I've been lucky and fortunate to play numerous games over the years in my last, say, 6-7 year career. You know, we play league games, 7 or 8 games. You play Leinster Championship, 3, maybe 4 games. You play an All-Ireland Series, 3, maybe a replay, 4 games. So, you've loads of games. You go all year. And the downfall of teams that don't experience that maybe are sort of lose their first round, lose their back door, or maybe in the Super 8s is different. But, you know, the teams that are looking to make the jump and looking to improve, and all they're given or all they're dealt with is 2 Championship games, you know, and just on the effect that has for players. Again, I spoke about this earlier, but for us as a group with Dublin, it builds friendships and camaraderie and trust and engagement, and it leaders emerge as the year goes on. Do you know what I mean? And it gives lads who might not be starting maybe that first round or second round, gives them a chance to get in as the games go on, versus a team, not to give an example, like a team who might lose their first round championship and they have a set team and they're trying to build a game plan, trying to build trust, and they're doing everything right, and their dedication to Gaelic is no different to anyone else's, but they lose their first round and then they're scrambling and the pressure is on to win the second round and they can't change their game plan, they can't change personnel, or they have to win at all costs, and then they lose again and they're out. And what happens there as players is there's a drift, there's a disconnect, you're not interacting, you're not building friendships with other players from different clubs, you're not building that trust in the background that we've been very fortunate to build in Dublin or in any of the maybe bigger teams over the last few years. You hear us talk about we're the best of friends, and why is that? Because we're forced to be the best of friends. We spend so much time together. We spend all year together, whereas other counties don't get that opportunity. So maybe I'm going a bit off proposal B, but I just think more games throughout a summer period or for a prolonged period or in a group setup or what, more games would mean that weaker teams will undoubtedly come on because they'll have a chance to work on their game plan. They'll build a trust with the manager. They'll build a trust amongst each other. Lads who might not have, as I said, leaders will emerge, great players will emerge. Someone you might not have thought would be the starting 15 might come on and lord it, that sort of way. And they only get those opportunities with more games. So I don't know what the answer is. I know there was huge debate after it in terms of tweaking it or whatever. That's not for me, but I just to emphasise the benefit. Forget, and that's not even to get into the hype that comes with games and the excitement that builds around the county who might get a run and goes to a winner-takes-all game, the last group stage or whatever it might be. Around the country, more games, the hype, the excitement, fans travelling around the country and the colours and the emotion and, coming home on the train and days out for fathers and sons or mothers and daughters. Those just the magic days of the GAA, I think, would be better served with more games and more events around the country. So maybe, I don't know. There will be a solution, there's no doubt, because I think we're all agreed, everyone has agreed that this has to change or something like that. But I just hope that, it probably won't. Maybe, I'm not sure will it happen in my playing days, but I think it should happen in terms of the benefit of the players and the benefit of the teams.
God, it would be worrying if it didn't happen in your playing days. Hopefully this is something that changes over the next couple of years. Brian, great chatting to you. When is D-Day? When is that video analysis day going to be when you eventually watch Mayo back?
Yeah, whenever we get back as a team. Yeah. I don't know if it'll be the first day. There'll probably be some sort of gym testing. And then the first weekend is, I'm sure there'll be a camp and there'll be analysis, reviews, breakaway groups. There'll be a full tribunal into it. But hopefully more learnings than anything else. But huge excitement for next year. Can't wait for that. It's only this morning when you're talking to likes yourself, you're here in Croke Park, the kid in you again just sort of comes back. And you sort of look forward to it again,
She's well, very best of luck with it all. And enjoy the rest of the time off from being a footballer for now anyway. Just a reminder that Avonmore Protein Milk have teamed up with Dublin footballer Brian Fenton and Kilkenny hurler Owen Murphy to launch the new Avonmore Pro Oats product. Fenton and Murphy, who have 9 All-Irelands between them, were representing the GPA, of whom, along with the GAA, Avonmore Protein Milk are a long-standing supporter. Brian Fenton, thanks a million.
Thanks, Tom. OTB
AM. Yeah, slightly concerning. His own points out that if Brian Fenton would probably pay for another 10 years, that things aren't fixed before then, we could be in a bit of bother and everything. But very eloquent and very giving and very interesting chat with Owen there from yesterday. Shifty lad, good morning to you. It's such a pity that GAA guys don't get out to express themselves more. These lads are heroes apart from their own. Unfortunately for hurling, we won't know many because of the helmets, from a visual recognition point of view. Best of luck, he says. And it was definitely interesting, he wasn't doing the old what about plan B? And normally the answer is, we just want to go out and play matches, and sure, look, we're keeping the head down, and sure, look, isn't that it? And sure, we'll drive on. There was a lot more to it than that, and this guy is going to be an interesting watch and an interesting listen for years to come.
Yeah, it's interesting as well because he's a Dublin footballer and we still don't know what Dublin voted for on the day of Congress. And they're not alone in that and being one of the counties that shied away from using their huge profile to sway the conversation. Kerry were in the mix, Galway, Mayo, Donegal, all that Western seaboard essentially disappointing in their lack of support for Proposal B, and Dublin in there as well, I guess, protecting what they have, protecting their own stranglehold, maybe in terms of provincial football and in terms of their ability to contend consistently. The calendar suits them, but it's about those elite counties making allowances and making concessions here and there that will be for the greater good. And to be honest with you, it'll be for the good of their counties as well.
Yeah. Just one other comment from YouTube here about our chat earlier on about the diversity of the Irish rugby team. Damien, good morning to you, says, from my English perspective, Ireland should forget about blooding new players and just go for a big win. Winning breeds winning culture and proper confidence. Sorry, that was about the team selection for the match against Argentina on Sunday. Right. It is 8:09, 8:10. It's Friday morning. You're watching OTBM with you until 10 this morning. Pack show still to come right here. We're going to hear from Alan Quinlan. There is a crappy quiz, live crappy quiz a little bit later on. We're going to be talking about football with Phil Thompson in just a little bit as well. But keep an eye out in this ad break for the Crack the Code series. It's brought to you by Whoop, the 24/7 personalised digital fitness and health coach that provides sleep, recovery and training insights. You can see whoop.com for much more of that. And keep an eye out here for Conor Murray and Katie McCabe talking nutrition.
OTB
AM. All right, you're welcome back. You'll have heard there in the ad break Conor Murray and Katie McCabe in the ads discussing the importance of nutrition in their lives, and it's all part of our Crack the Code series. It's with Whoop, the 24/7 personalised digital fitness and health coach, and you can see whoop.com for much more and all of that, and much more from Conor Murray and Katie and all the other ambassadors as well on a range of different topics over the coming weeks. Now it's 8:13, it's Friday morning and it's a busy weekend. The Premier League is back, and delighted to say Liverpool legend Phil Thompson joins us on the line. Morning to you, Phil.
Good morning, guys. Good morning to you. We'll great the Premier League's back.
Yeah.
Five mils.
You don't it well. It could be. We'll see what happens at the weekend. Before we get into the Arsenal game, I wanted to ask you, obviously, Stevie G, big talking point over the last few weeks. He's done his first press conference now. I presume, are you still at that level of contact where you can send him a good luck and strong arm emoji?
Yeah, very much. And Gary McAllister and there's other staff members, being quite close to them. I think it's a really good job for Stevie. I thought he'd done absolutely fantastic at Rangers. I thought that was a tough job when he went up there, and he turned it around quicker than what I thought he would do. He brought success. He changed the dynamic, obviously, with Celtic win and everything. And I think Aston Villa has come along just at the right time for him, just the right club. It's not one of those sort of big sort of six clubs, as we like to call them. So I think Aston Villa is just right there. It's still a difficult and a tough job, but I think it's just right for Stevie.
Mm. And for now, all the conversation tends to be dominated by, isn't he ultimately going to Liverpool? I mean, can't it coexist, Phil, that he's wants to go into Villa, make a great success of it, and it's absolutely fine to think that at some point down the track he wants to move on to a bigger club?
You can think of that. That is obviously going to be in everybody's mind. But as I've said to a few people, there's no guarantees that Liverpool... Everybody just thinks that is the step which is Stevie's going to take. What happens if Jürgen Klopp... You know, I know Stevie said he signs a contract for life, but what happens if he signs a new contract now? On Stevie's lifespan at sort of Villa, no matter how good he does, how bad he does, will not sort of transpire that way. So Jürgen Klopp might sign a new contract. That might not come round to Stevie. People's minds were just going, Jürgen Klopp leaves, Stevie Gerrard steps up. It might never be that way. So Stevie has to look after himself. He has to do what's right for his career. And I think this opportunity has come along just at the right time.
His interview for the Villa job lasted 5 hours. Christian Perslow said it was an outstanding interview involving a PowerPoint presentation. Gerrard telling them how he wants to implement this possession style of football at Aston Villa. How successful do you think that style can be with a team who are in the bottom half of the Premier League?
Well, I think he's got to mix things up. He's got to make sure that's tough to beat. Stevie's team, obviously, up at Rangers, has got to be mainly attacking, because most of the games you're going to have most of the ball. You've got to do things like that. At Aston Villa at the moment, 2 points above the relegation zone, you know, you've got to think not all defensively. You've got to make sure you're going to be hard to beat, because you start picking up a few goals, the wins then will fall. you're getting beat all the time. You're playing nice, attractive football. You're getting beat 3-2. Everybody says, oh, yeah, but it's the type of football. No, it's not. Fans like to see winning football. And I think that is the only way that Stevie, and as he said, it's coming up the first game against Brighton. They have to hit the ground running and make sure that they start winning games. And it's not all going to be about flair. That will come. You've got to have an idea. And I think Stevie, in a PowerPoint presentation, will look at all aspects of the game, not just, you know, oh, it's lovely and it's attacking football the way he's played it at Rangers.
Mm. One of the things that stuck out to me from reading Stephen Gerrard this week is what he had to say about Gerard Houllier. Obviously, the connection there with Aston Villa and with Liverpool. He paid tribute to him and said he'd be forever in debt to him in terms of how he looked after him, the communication with his parents, and Gerrard, I guess, making that step up to be a top-class footballer. What was your recollection of that period when Houllier, I guess, was moulding Gerrard into this player?
Well, Gerard Houllier had a massive impact on Stevie's sort of lifestyle in what he did, as we've heard with the likes of Jamie Carragher. Houllier was always looking in depth, and people just weren't looking at the footballer. They were looking at the family, the lifestyle, how they looked after themselves. And my text to Stevie after he'd won the league at Rangers was, the boss would be absolutely so proud of you. And I think he would do, because he's given him all those aspects. He looks seriously about the game, and that's the way Gerard Houllier, the in-depth view of his football, but he had a nice human touch to it. So it's great being a football manager, and you can be one of the tough ones, you can be one of the soft ones. I think you've got to be somewhere in between. And I think Stevie will have learned, not just off Gerard Houllier, off all the people that he's been with. You take the good and the bad from it. And I think it's very important. It's lovely. I didn't know that he'd spoken about Gerard. And I think that is very nice. But Gerard had a massive impact on his footballing career. And I think it will have an impact on his managerial career.
Because I think so much, and you'll understand it, Phil, from coaching in the Premier League, so much of it is about, outside of the tactical and selections bit, about your demeanour and your attitude and your... Like, he comes across as a very intense character, I suppose, maybe is the way to put it. How does that marry with the intensity and the spotlight have been in, albeit, as you say, not a top four or six job, but a big Premier League position now?
Stevie comes across with that demeanour of his, but Stevie does love a laugh. He does love a giggle, and I think you've got to have that part of it. Football should be about fun and enjoyment, and that's the way of it. And he will know that, and he's got to be extremely serious about it. The tactics, you're quite right, have to come into it. To be a top manager with the likes of your Jurgen Klopps and your Pep Guardiolas, they are so intense. That's why these guys don't sort of last at one club for too long. And Stevie will throw himself into that. So tactically, he's got to be right. Formations, he's got to make sure he knows rotation of players now is so important. A lot more different in the Premier League than in the Scottish Premiership. So I think Stevie will get that right. He does know, as he said, he's missed the Premier League, the intensity of the Premier League, and I think he will enjoy it when he gets into it. I think he'll find it a lot tougher than what he's probably even thinking at this moment, because of, it, dare I say, Villa's predicament with the relegation zone. So, yes, it's going to be tough, but I think he will enjoy it.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating watch for the rest of us as well. Liverpool-Arsenal this weekend, Phil. Following on from the West Ham game, it's always hard to know if it's better from a Liverpool point of view to have been straight back into it, or if they've, you know, it's been a positive thing for them almost to have been stewing over this for the last couple of weeks.
No, I would rather have had another game straight after
would you?
It and make sure you get sort of back on the bike. This is... You just hope with the game before that, the Brighton game, draw and that, and then having the game against... I know we've had the European game, but it's just... You want to sort of get back into it straight away and have that sort of... The Premier League is coming. And it's a massive game. Arsenal is always one of the big games, always one of the big attractions in the Anfield calendar. And it's proved... quite fruitful for Liverpool over the past. So I think it is really sort of welcome at this time. Coming back to Anfield, I think Liverpool will be ready for it. Mm. Arsenal are probably going, well, we could have done without Liverpool getting beaten the last match, because they're going to be absolutely even more up for it.
Yeah.
Well, what area is concerning you most about Liverpool at the moment, if you had to pick one?
Well, like, without being a tactical genius, I think the set plays obviously a bit of a worry, the way people surround her. And I don't care what anybody will say, whether I'm sort of looking through blinkers or not, I still believe that the two goals that Alisson was responsible, he should have done better with them. But Antonio, Mauro Mbappé, actually pushes him underneath the ball. You can see where his arm goes into him. And then the other one, Antonio's doing exactly the same. Ashley Barnes of Burnley syndrome, standing in front, making no attempt to go for the ball, and is literally impeding Alisson. He's got his arms there to stop him actually moving. That is not legal, I don't, in any form. But I think that is the area where you would be sort of concerned. And my goodness, as I said, if Arsenal haven't been doing the homework, they will do exactly the same and surround Alisson tomorrow.
And they've been good at set pieces so far this season, Arsenal. I think they've, like, a couple of games into the season, they're already out, outperformed their goals from set pieces in the total of last year. Are they still flaky, Phil, Arsenal, or is it still going to take a little bit more time to prove that they're not?
They've had a great run, haven't they? They've been unbeaten in 10 games in all comps, unbeaten in 8 in the Premier League. But they're still away from home, you know. They've only scored 3 goals, which will be concerning Mikel Arteta. Only Norwich have they've scored only 2 away from home. So it will be a concern for them in how you turn around that. But listen, Arteta's still in that stage where, yes, he can be flaky at the back. But again, it's what we were saying about Stevie Gerrard. You know, if you can sort out your defence, and I don't think he's got that completely right, at least it gives you chances in games. And he's done that, Mikel Arteta. I always believe that he should be given a bit more time. He does seem a good coach, but he's got to get his basics right in between. This, as I say, has been very fruitful for Liverpool. He's scored lots of goals in these games. And I'm hoping, as a Liverpool fan, that it continues tomorrow.
Yeah, and maybe another area of concern, concession, obviously, goals that we've mentioned, concerns at the back, a couple of injuries around the middle as well, Phil. I don't know if that's the root of some of it, but I know that he's gone for 9 different midfield combinations across the course of the season, some to do with injury, some to do with form. Like, is there also a point where they're feeling the pinch of Wijnaldum's loss now, or do you see it slightly differently?
You'll Wijnaldum, I always thought, was a fantastic footballer, a great footballer. And you will. But Gini Wijnaldum was always going to leave Liverpool. And I told that to lots of people 18 months before all the words that were coming out from him. I said, it's all the words of somebody who's running the contract down. And it doesn't matter what Liverpool were going to offer him. So the Gini Wijnaldum thing is gone, done, dusted. Now I think we have our midfield, which is now the equivalent to what we had at the back last year. The injuries are piling up. We're getting down to the bare bones of it. All start with the unfortunate injury to Harvey Elliott. And then Keita just seems to be injured all the time. You can't rely upon saying Milner should be fit. I would like to think Jordan Henderson, it was just protection of an injury. I'm hoping that I see he was training, but not with all the squad in the last couple of days. Thiago, hopefully, should be back. But it is, they're getting down to the bare bones in that area. And it is, as you said as well, which is the best functioning 3 in there. And I think that is going to be important as well.
What's your view on that?
Sorry?
What is the best functioning 3?
Well, the best functioning 3, I think at this moment in time, if the fit, I think it's if you get the likes of James Milner, I know he's a lot older, Henderson, those two on both sides of Fabinho in the centre. Because Fabinho does give that protection. to the back two, and the energy of the other two can go about and set patterns and close and down. I always feel like at the moment that is Liverpool's best three. You'd be amazed because you're saying no Thiago in there. I still think it takes him, from what I've seen of him at Liverpool, it takes him maybe 5 or 6 games before he's actually up to speed when he comes back in games. So Milner is normally super fit, and he's quite simply, he gets into my team.
Yeah. Like, I mean, one of the other things, obviously, is this thing of, and you mentioned the Brighton game a bit earlier, but dropping points from winning positions in a way that just hasn't been Liverpool. Certainly in the title-winning season, they've already overshot, overshot their record for the entire season already this season, if you compare it to a couple of years ago. Twice in front against City, obviously, it didn't last long. You mentioned the Brighton game as well. Almost from an opposition point of view, Phil, if you're playing Liverpool now in a way that previously it would have been, will Liverpool get ahead and they're going to kill us from here no matter what happens? And it's not the mindset now of the opponents.
No, well, it's a lot of teams are like that. They'll set up, and normally if you went a goal ahead, other teams would break out and trying to sort of change and go and try and get something back in the game. Now they go, no, at 1-0, let's just sit there. Let's be sort of quite happy with this. Even at 2-0, some teams just sit back. So this seems to be the way. Listen, Brighton were a very good team and worked their way back into that game against Liverpool. And totally, listen, I was happy for the 90-plus minutes that were up, because if anybody was going to score, it was going to be Brighton. It was a concern. And I think that is an area also for Jürgen that he needs to look at. Is we played some wonderful football, some great stuff in the early part of the games. We absolutely blew Brighton away, some fantastic football. But at certain times, and I don't want to get back to that position where you actually need 3 goals to be comfortable, is that we have to put these teams to bed. We have to make sure we do take our chances. But also more concentration at the back. And we do not get sloppy.
Yeah, and I mean, the only way to do all of that is obviously get a few results on the pitch and iron all that stuff out. We'll see how that unfolds. Arsenal very settled. What's your expectation then, Phil, for that game?
I do think, and with sort of Liverpool enjoying this fixture, I do expect Liverpool to win. And with Arsenal only scoring 3 away goals, I would hope that Liverpool will keep a clean sheet as well, guys.
Yeah. Can I ask you one quick one before we let you away? There's been a lot of chat about Brendan Rodgers and United, maybe increased. It's been increased over the last while. He said that he's fully committed to Leicester. It did sort of remind me of the Stevie G comment just before he left Rangers that, you know, do I not look settled? You know, so there could be a little bit of that. But that notwithstanding, a good fit for United?
I think he'd be a very good fit for United. I really do. He's a very, very good coach. And I know what Brendan is. Brendan will be saying to Manchester United, look, I'm not putting my head on the chopping block and saying, yes, I'm interested in. If you're interested in me, you'll be interested when you come and you're giving me the job. And then I'll put my head above the parapet and go, well, thank you very much. It's one of the biggest jobs in the world. And you cannot just turn it down. But at the moment, if I'm only in it with another 6 people, sorry, I'm quite happy at Leicester City.
It would leave a bad taste, would it, in Liverpool fans' mouths?
Well, I don't think he was ever committed, was he? I mean, as a Liverpool fan, he did fantastic for Liverpool. Absolutely brilliant. I don't think it'll be that same thing as Rafa Benitez going to Everton after what Rafa Benitez did. But, Brendan Rodgers, I wish him the best of luck. I think he's a fantastic coach. He's a really good guy. And I think he'll do really well for Manchester United.
Yeah. All right, Phil Thompson. Thanks a million.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Thanks a lot, as always. Phil Thompson on the line there, looking ahead to the game of the weekend. Plenty of interesting stuff to say as well. Besides, Owen, what are you thinking? You were hinting at earlier on, but Arsenal have a great chance, don't they?
I'm not sure about that. Like, I mean, it's as I said, it will be like a pretty significant staging point where they'd actually get something from this game tomorrow, but I'm not sure it will necessarily happen. Like, Anfield has been a very, very bad place for them, like a place of nightmares for Arsenal over the last couple of years.
Yeah. All right. 8:31. It's Friday morning. Loads still to come on the show. And a reminder as well, by the way, Arsenal and Ireland fans won't want to miss our next Cadbury FC roadshow. There's a flavour of what's going to happen at it. We're going behind the scenes with the Arsenal invincible Robert Pires, the Gunners star, and Ireland captain Katie McCabe, also joined by the former Arsenal S&C coach and Ireland rugby legend, of course, Gerry Flannery as well. It's all with thanks to Cadbury FC and their club partnerships, granting you behind the scenes access at the Premier League's biggest clubs, coming soon to O2B Sports Channel. So do keep an eye on that over the next while. Let's tell you what's happening across the back pages now. We're going to start with otbsports.com. This is what's live on the site this morning. Outstanding Ramsdale key to Arsenal's defence. Stuart Robson was on the show with Will last night, so lots of thoughts in there. A lot of younger players certainly at Arsenal coming through now, the backbone of that team. Clubs to receive €20 million each as NBC by Premier League rights for $2.4 billion. This is the American rights package. Really interesting stuff there. And John Giles discusses Bill O'Hurley, Eamon Dunphy, Liam Brady and Roy Keane, and plenty more as well. So lots on otbsports.com for you this morning, so keep an eye out on that up there. Let's get stuck into what's happening across the back pages this morning at 8:32. We're going to kick off with the Herald. Fenton Dubs were wrong to go train. There's a lot of coverage of this one in the papers today. Midfielder admits that lockdown training session was not the right example for Dublin team to set. He does admit that at the time he was kind of feeling that actually he was feeling a bit hard done by, and there was a lot of headlines about whether they should be training, and he was thought, maybe this has all been blown out of proportion. But in the passage of time on, he's now saying that, and lots, he goes into detail in it, saying that, yeah, actually we misstepped.
Yeah, it feels like a long old time ago now, doesn't it?
It really does.
It was Easter time, and yeah, it's one of those. He was one of the people there, wasn't he? So I guess it was natural that came up yesterday, I guess, in some of the interviews. So I think maybe a couple of months after it, we probably got to the point of being like, that was the getting wound up about people training outdoors maybe in itself wasn't a right move, even though I was one of those people who would have said who would have slammed them, to use that phrase, at the time anyway. So I'm sure when he's talking about that coverage, he probably is referring to us as much as the rest of the media as well. But I guess maybe with passage of time, you're like, this whole thing was a little bit mad, wasn't it?
It was, and it will look increasingly mad as time moves further away from this thing, although who knows where we're at the minute. But I do think also, and he does take responsibility for it, I think you have to do that. I don't think there's a huge amount of buts that come after that. If at that moment it was the wrong thing to do, you got to take that one on the chin. That is the Herald for you. Also, chat there, Henshaw for a turn in Argentina showdown, writes Rory O'Connor. So it looks as though that team is pretty much out and about in most of the papers today, if you piece them together. The Irish Examiner for you this morning, opening a door. Keith Earls, unbelievably proud to tackle mental health struggles. A series of brilliant interviews around the release of his book, including with Joe Malloy, that you can check out in the OTB Sports channels. It's really, really brilliant, almost an hour long, and a great insight into the man. Ronan O'Gara peering through the haze of Irish euphoria. He's been reflecting on a pretty mad week of reaction, particularly for the New Zealand squad in their homeland, and plenty more inside as well there. That's the Herald. Rory, I'm back, says the Irish Daily Mail this morning. On fire, McIlroy sights on a major revival. He's had a good round, opening round to the DP World Tour Championships in Dubai. It sort of, rather the headline was like, Rory is back.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rory telling everybody he's going to get back. But yeah, that's it. FAIC heavyweight for lucrative March tie. They're trying to line up a decent friendly. I think they had Italy lined up, writes Philip Quinn here, in March, but thwarted by the failure of the European champions to qualify directly for the World Cup. So that is the Irish Daily Mail for you there. Some of the tabloids here, the Irish Daily Mirror this morning. I can cop the lot at Villa, a new era for Anfield legend Stevie G. Gerrard, this is no stepping stone to the Liverpool job. I can achieve all my dreams at this club. I mean, that's not really true, is it? Like, he can win trophies if that's... It's a slight bent on what you assume is the actual truth, which is he wants to go and win Premier Leagues and European Cups at Liverpool. That's... And it's fine. Like, just everybody just accept that and on we go with life. And more League of Ireland chat as well inside there. That is the Mirror for you, the Sun. I'll show him who's boss. Pep and Klopp hold no fear for Gerrard. He's Jack at Hoops. Jack Byrne is going to seal his Shamrock Rovers return this weekend. That is Owen Cowser there. And Rodgers, United fear. Brendan Rodgers worried that being a target for Manchester United could destabilise his Leicester team.
Shamrock Rovers have released the video of Jack Byrne being unveiled. So,
so it's happening.
It's happening.
Very good. The Irish Independent for you. Jack's back. Kerry to start league campaign in Kildare. How are you feeling about this?
Grand.
Yeah.
Trip Kildare. To Newbridge on a Sunday afternoon.
Whatever. Swat them aside.
Exactly.
Minnows. Mere minnows. Flies on the windshield of
not
Kerry's
not Manchester United.
Drive for Sam. That is the Irish Independent. Fenton, Dublin should have shown a better example. Donegal Boyle there. Henshaw to return as Farrell stays strong for Argentina clash. That's the Independent. I should mention as well, by the way, and I'm mentioning it because it comes up in some of the other newspapers as well, the front page of the Irish Independent this morning, and it's brilliant to see the coverage at getting this level of exposure. Where is she? Serena intervenes in tennis mystery. American tennis champion Serena Williams has called for an investigation into missing Chinese player Peng Shuai. She has not been heard from since she made sexual assault allegations against a leading Chinese government official 2 weeks ago. It's a story that is also picked up on the front of the Guardian. And you do feel that, sorry, I have it here. You do feel that the level of exposure, that level of exposure and heat that is going to come on the Chinese government from the back of this is a powerful tool, particularly the Guardian in the UK. Questions have to be asked. It's going to, you assume, off the back of that type of exposure, it's going to be raised in, you would hope, at a government level in Britain, and not a story that's going anywhere anytime soon until we find out exactly what's happened here.
Bonkers story, isn't it? There, like, so many different layers to this thing. At this point, obviously, there's still a huge amount of uncertainty about Peng Shuai and where she might be. Like, one of the strangest, maybe people who know China a lot better than us would say it's not strange at all, but one of the more intriguing aspects of this was the CGTN publication of the emails between Shuai and WTA, from Steve Simon from the WTA, saying that everything is fine, and it had apparently a couple of hallmarks from other forced confessions by detainees in China, and apparently they just don't believe this whatsoever, that this was her saying that everything is fine, that the email was fabricated essentially from their side of things. So still a lot of concern about her whereabouts and her well-being, and it's grim to say the very least. And I think even what was it, I think the post was up for 30 minutes on the social media site Weibo in China, and yet in that 30 minutes it had gone so viral to the point where this becomes a global story. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this thing plays out, because how the WTA react, they seem to have taken a relatively hardline stance in it in the context of sporting bodies. The IOC, meanwhile, one of the most wishy-washy things you're ever likely to hear. Experience shows that quiet diplomacy offers the best opportunity to find a solution for questions of such nature. That is.
Sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes you've got to beat the drum and put it on the front page of the Guardian.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's like, let's not make too much of a fuss, and we'll have a few quiet things, and she might just reappear. I mean, it's very concerning. And the WTA are saying, you know, maybe we might look at if, you know, nothing, we're not satisfied by all of this. We might look at, you know, maybe we'd pull the tour from China.
I think they will, though.
You can't seriously suggest, but surely the WTA should be standing by their player here. This is serious matter of the utmost serious matter that you could have. This woman has disappeared. Surely they should be saying, if we don't find out what's happening here, we are not going back to China. Full stop. No ambiguity about it.
I would suspect that would be the end product anyway of this, especially given the players that have spoken out in this.
Yeah,
and that's
they're not going to turn
up,
by the way. It's a good point.
Yeah, like, if you look at it cynically, they're not going to. The players will probably do the boycotting for the tour, and then the tour can hop on board the social justice bandwagon then and say, yeah, no, we always were going to make this decision to not go to China.
The Irish Times, strong Ireland selection set to reflect the respect Argentina are held in. Robert Balakun seems to be one of those players who's going to get back in the mix there. Earl's glad he was an open book about his struggles, writes Jerry Thornley inside as well. And Griffin expected to get great Ireland farewell, writes Dar Walsh, as well as Ireland take on Japan at the RDS as well. The Irish Daily Star, Jack's Rovers return. Byrne is back at Talaf. FAI prefer either France or England. This is for this March friendly, writes Paul Lennon there as well. Paul can be the man. He's looking for Paul Mannion, Brian Fenton, Paul Mannion to get back in the mix. Shooting the lights out for Croke's own by all accounts. And we'll know a little bit more about that today. Play Jude's in the final this weekend. See where that goes. The Telegraph this morning. Rafiq, sorry for anti-Semitic messages. Racism whistleblower is ashamed about offensive posts, writes Ben Rumsby and Nick Holt inside. I'm a different person today, says the former Yorkshire player. And he has apologised profusely in the exchanges printed there in the front page of the Telegraph. He's apologised for that. The one thing you would hope is that that doesn't just get wrapped up and washed away in the greater conversation about the serious concerns that he has raised about English cricket and some individuals within it. The Times, new Erasmus referee row, South Africa director of rugby targeted another official with aggressive emails. It's an extraordinary story and it'll run and run for a while yet. And it seems like there's been a little bit of history from Razzie Erasmus writing off a rash email after a game as to, you know, things didn't go his way. And that is that there. Plenty of other good writing across the pages as well. This morning, I do also want to mention one story up on otbsports.com. It's Gay in the GEA, One Man's Story. Really good read here. This is a piece that went up at the site yesterday. It's written by three DCU journalism students, Luke Delaney, Sean Crosby and Sean Comer. It is live on our website now. It's a really good insight into especially Brian Fennell, 20-year-old Gaelic footballer, plays for his local team, Arklow Geraldine's Ballymoney, captained the junior C team to the Wilson Buttle Cup back in September, and how it's all just so normal for him to talk away to his teammates about him being gay and that it's not an issue and he didn't need to have any huge... no great gesture was required. It was just a series of small conversations and there was no big deal about it. And that's definitely the place we want to be, I think. And certainly Brian talking about it is going to help all of that. And yeah, there's plenty more reaction and other comments inside as well. And a brilliant read and been responded to extraordinarily well. David Goff, one of those retweeting it yesterday. So, and plenty of good things to see about it. A great story.
Yeah, it's almost like where you would like to see the conversation be in a few years' time. It's almost like one of the first people we've seen talk about this from a Gaelic game standpoint, and the story is a positive one. Like, yeah. In a sort of grim expectation, you would expect this to be kind of a story of anecdotes about how it was a story of non-acceptance within the GEA, but actually it's surprisingly positive in that front, that certainly within his own dressing rooms and with opposition players even, things have been positive. The only thing is, obviously, when you refer to David Goff there, that maybe the lack of a full-blown support mechanism from the GEA a couple of years ago with regards to like the Rainbow Laces campaign and stuff like that is the one disappointment he had, but hopefully that's changing over the next little while. And as I say, this kind of feels like this is just a pretty run-of-the-mill conversation that he's had with his teammates, and that is exactly where you want to be from the outset.
Yeah, I think it's all about really at its essence creating safe and comfortable environments for people to play sport. That's the absolute essence of it, and if you have a counter view to that, I think you want to take a long, hard look at yourself. I think no matter if you're playing in the Leinster League or it's Junior D hurling in Leitrim, East Leitrim, if it's the Irish International Women's Rugby Team, whatever it might be, it's about creating safe environments for people to play sport. It's the long and short of it. It's a good read, and I'd recommend... What I would recommend is that you go and download the OTB Sports app and head there and read it there, because it's definitely the best place to pick up all your best OTB content. You can head along to the Play Store or the App Store, whatever it is you want, whatever platform it is you're on, and download the OTB Sports app now and turn on notifications as well. It means that we can hit you up with the best stuff as it lands. Now, 8:45, Irish Rugby is the main... creme de la creme of talking points at the minute. Alan Quinlan, good morning to you.
Morning, lads. How are you?
You're doing your last bit of genning up there before we stick you with some of the tough questions. What it's some of the? I don't know if you picked up any of the papers this morning, but some of the team has been as tends to happen. It's interesting to see that it looks like an Andy Farrell team is a team that gets leaked. But by and large, outside of the couple of enforced changes in the halfbacks, particularly that it'll be same old, which feels a little bit disappointing to me. What's your view on it?
Yeah, a little bit. I would have liked to see Craig Casey. This is all speculation, I think. I was a little bit surprised that the forward pack is pretty much the same. And Balakun is the only kind of new face we're going to see in there. Robbie Henshaw being back is obviously a boost. But look, I suppose they're giving Argentina the respect that they deserve, and they probably want to finish on a high. If you mix and match and make loads of changes, do you lose the game? And of course it's important to win it, but probably would have liked to have seen a few more changes in the team.
Yeah, well, like, would you nearly not get a free shot at it in some ways? Like, on the basis of what happened last weekend, if you're ever going to have a bit of a sampler to have a look at, like, look, I think if you're Gavin Coombs this morning, if you're Craig Casey, if you're Ryan Baird, some of these players who are hoping to get a bit of a shot, like, look, they probably already know the team, but if you're reading that this morning, like, even from that point of view, it must be incredibly deflating.
Yeah, I thought that that was the plan. Again, I was speculating, so I'm not sure at the start that I said it to you a couple of weeks ago, that it would be a very strong team for Japan, the team that would probably take on New Zealand. Because they needed a game together, and I really thought this one was a game that they would mix a few guys in, and yeah, they'd be very, very disappointed if they weren't getting games and not getting an opportunity in this. I'm sure the bench will reflect some new players there, but it would be nice to see two or three more of them get into the team and see what they can do at the weekend.
Who would you have put in, Quinny, if you were trying to give somebody their shot and a bit of experience? Who would you have had in there?
I would have liked to have seen Kieran Frawley. I would have liked to have seen something from him to see if he could do something. I'm sure Harry Byrne will probably be off on the bench. Maybe Jack Carty will jump right into the bench. Ryan Baird, maybe, yeah, he would have been one. Even Dan Sheehan starting a game would have been something. I would have liked to have seen Craig Casey with Joey Carberry and see what he can do there. And he's developing all the time, Craig Casey, and I think he can be, you know, an integral part of what Ireland want to do in the next number of years. He's so young, and he can play that high tempo game as well. And he's shown that and proved that, particularly in the under-20s. So, yeah, there's a couple there. I'm not sure you could make that many changes, because you don't want to completely kind of take away the bit of continuity that they've built, but maybe two or three more into the team. I'm really glad that Balakun looks like he's going to get a start. Again, we're speculating on the team. It looks like it's Balakun will play on the right wing.
You're a big fan, Quinny. So, I remember we chatted about him a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I'm a fan, Adrian, because you can coach lots of things in lots of people, but you can't, you know, out and out pace is something that it's hard to, it's you know, you can't compete with that. Of course, he's got to be a decent rugby player and do the other parts of the game that are really important. There's no point in having a guy that's really quick there and he's poor defensively, or he's poor under the high ball. I think this guy has incredible potential. He's still developing. Is he ready to start? And you know, he's probably still getting better. But if you can give someone a ball like him in any little bit of space, and that kind of acceleration pace is something that it's hard to beat. So hopefully he can get some quality ball. And I think for anyone thinking that this is going to be kind of easy, and look, I'm sure that's how the Irish management have viewed this. Argentina are always very, very difficult to play against. someone asked me a couple of weeks ago, what was it like to play against Argentina? And I don't know, the first thing that comes to head is you're just playing a team that are in your face all the time. There's probably 15 Alan Quinlans playing against you. just constantly, like, annoying you, putting pressure on you, bringing unbelievable passion. I'm not saying that I did all that. I probably was good at the annoying part and being in people's faces and frustrating people and, you know, being offside or slowing opposition ball down, stuff like that. I could say I was probably good at that stuff, but they're very, very competitive and they're hard to play against at times. And they're the kind of team that if you play again, if you kind of think it's going to happen and you drop your kind of intensity a little bit, they could really frustrate you and make it a really, really difficult game. So, look, it's only over 12 months ago when we struggled to beat Georgia.
Yeah.
So maybe we will get a bit of a reality check that, you know, this team is still needs to develop and they need to cope and deal with playing a team like that who they're incredibly talented as well. So don't get me wrong. There's some brilliant talented players here. And we've struggled against Argentina. You know, they knocked us out of 2 World Cups or 3 World Cups. I can't remember. 15, 2007 and
99.
So it's 99 as well. Yeah, it's 3 World Cups. Yeah. So they kind of know how to get in amongst Ireland and frustrate them. We've beaten them in a lot of these November tests over the years. So I think that's probably the reason why it's a kind of it's a risk reward scenario, and I think the Irish management want to try and finish on a high. And look, he has capped a lot of players, and I think it's important that we say that and people realise that there's over 20 players been capped by Andy Farrell in the last 18 months or 2 years since he took over. So it's not as if he's stuck with the tried and trusted all the time. He's capped a lot of players. Maybe one or two more into this team would have been what I would have liked to have seen, but I'm sure we'd see it off the bench.
Is there a quite a big gap at the moment, Alan, between, say, those people who are kind of rotation players? Say if you take Joey Carberry, who's got over his 20 caps at this point and is relatively experienced, and some of the players you mentioned there, like Ryan Baird, Craig Casey, Kieran Frawley, who only have a handful of caps between them, that there is a huge drop-off experience-wise when you get to those players, and actually trying to filter them into a game against a quality team like Argentina is just actually a really tricky thing to do. It's actually the summer tours when the Lions are away, for example, which is their real opportunity when you've only got 2 or 3 caps.
Yeah, I think that's an issue. You make wholesale changes on, and I've said this provincially before with Munster, and I said it at the time. I've always kind of believed at the time I was playing myself that if you bring 7 or 8 new players into a team, you do lose a bit of continuity. You lose that bit of cohesion that you've built up, and the team can then have a bad performance, and then 7 or 8 players then can get labelled with being not good enough. I always kind of thought myself, play 2 guys or 3 guys with 12 experienced players that are your normal starters. You can't make wholesale changes because you do lose too much. I'm sure we'll see some of these guys off the bench. I would have liked to have seen Simon Zeebo. You know, he's in the squad and he's not going to have any involvement here. I would have liked to have seen him maybe as an option fullback. We know Hugo Keenan has taken over that jersey now, and he's been absolutely brilliant, and he's the number one choice at fullback. But if something happens, Hugo Keenan, and you've got to shuffle the deck a little bit, it would have been nice maybe to see Zeebo there and see if he could, you know, what he can do. I'm sure he's brought massive enthusiasm to be back in the Irish squad. That is the concern. But like, if you make 7 changes, you do lose a little bit. And then Monday morning, we'll be saying these players are not good enough, which sometimes is a bit unfair. So I'm sure Craig Casey will get involvement, maybe Harry Byrne. Kieran Frawley, I would like to have seen him involved. James Hume is another really talented player, but unfortunately, you can't have them all involved, and that's the reality. You mentioned Gavin Coombs as well. You know, people are very excited about him. He's been sick for the last few weeks. Will he get off the bench and get some more game time? The back row were absolutely brilliant the last 2 weeks, so they're the number one back row now at the moment. But it would have been like nice to see Coombs as well.
Yeah. And Jack Harty, you mentioned as well. I thought he'd been totally jettisoned from the squad, never to be seen again. But I was sat right behind the post, Quinny, on Saturday, and there he was going around in his tracksuit as whatever it must have been, number 30 in the squad, whatever it was. But he's obviously somewhere in the mix. Will you talk to us as well just a little bit about the aftermath of one of the comments that jumped out of me from the game afterwards? Sexton talking about the slight tweak in the mental approach from the Ireland side, and they've been doing a lot of work obviously with Gary Keegan, but he said specifically, you know, there's a point in the game where maybe previously, and I was somewhat surprised by it, that Ireland might have actually just packed up their bags and said, well, look, we've come close but we're not going to get it done. But that ability to grind it out, that is I mean, of all the shifts in what we've seen, you mentioned the Georgia game a year ago, that's a huge one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, I think. And that comes from, I suppose, a drive and desire within the group. I think they've... I can only imagine what they were feeling probably for the last 2 years and how challenging and difficult it can be. You know, you get scrutinised a lot. You're scratching your head about some of the performances and going right back to that World Cup where things started to unravel a little bit. And they've tried to change the way they play, change their mentality, as you say. But there's a lot of experience in the group and you're going to have ups and downs for any sports person. So I'm sure they've drawn on that experience. And it's amazing. It's funny. Sometimes, and I've experienced it myself in my own career, you just, something clicks and you feel that something you've been working on in training just is starting to happen. And it's not necessarily the end product with the last two passes for the try, but it's maybe the shape, the quality of the carry, the execution of the line out, if you're taking it off the back of the line out and you know, taking it up through the middle, and trying to build some sort of a plan and a shape to try and upset the opposition or attack the opposition, and something sticks and something happens, and then you start to believe that these things are attainable. And I think they've probably had those moments in the last few months. And I think it was particularly at the end of the Six Nations. You know, if you go back to the France game in the Six Nations, where, you know, they did a lot of good things. James Lowe nearly scores the try in the corner and he was put in touch and, you know, wind on to the end of the game. They're losing it by 2 points and they're chasing the game. Things not happening. Momentum not going their way. So I think they... You know, the couple of big things happened. The win in Scotland was really vital from a mental point of view. Sexton nailing the kick to win it after being in a really good position. So you kind of draw on that stuff. And look, there's no quick fix solution to becoming mentally strong and using that as a resource to get you over the line. But I kind of had the feeling myself in commentary last week that you just kind of know by body shape and the body language of players that even if New Zealand scored that try and was given by Ioane, that I thought, you know, New Zealand would have went in head, an easy conversion to kick. I just kind of said to myself, right, you know, they'll be able to come back down the field and the way they've played, they'll attack him again. Maybe they'll get a penalty and win it. So if I was kind of feeling that, you feel that from the team as well. So they've obviously drawn a lot. Like when you're in a negative place and, you know, just look at Liverpool last year, losing the 6 games and on the trot. When things start going wrong for you and you get one or two injuries and people start piling the pressure on, it just, the opposition sense of vulnerability. And I think, you know, particularly in the last couple of years with a couple of big beatings from England, they set a kind of a template about how you take on Ireland, how you stop them playing and how you slow them down. And I think they've obviously tried to change that approach and tried to put more kind of pace into their game and get better attacking shape. So It's a long answer, but I think they probably have got those moments in training where things are starting to stick a little bit, and it does create a little bit of confidence.
Yeah, and again, of course, look at everything in the context of the World Cup. I want to ask you as well, before we let you away, Ireland-Japan tomorrow, RDS, 3 o'clock, people should get down to it. A few new caps on the bench. We've Ciara Griffin signing off, Adam Griggs signing off, and yet another new out half, Quinny.
Yeah, it's there's been a fair bit of change, and it's been a bit of turmoil for the women's team. But I think it'd be nice if they finished on a high. I think they've been through a fair bit, and it's amazing the way people have spoke about Ciara Griffin. I don't know her, but from what I was hearing, she's an incredible professional and really driven and passionate about playing for her country. And it's sad to see her go at 27, but they've been through a fair bit, and they've got to kind of rebuild with Greg McWilliams coming in. It's the start of a new era. There's a couple of players obviously off with the sevens, and that's kind of taking preference over these games, because obviously they're not World Cup qualifiers, but hopefully they can finish on a high, get a good win against Japan, and kind of turn the page with this team and start building towards the future for them. And I think, look, Greg McWilliams is a really good appointment, and hopefully they can, you know, he can bring in some change and bring a bit of enthusiasm. There's three new caps on the bench as well, so you sense there's a bit of a transitional period here with the team.
Yeah. All right. Enjoy the game of the weekend. Thanks a million.
Cheers. Thanks, lads.
Alan Quinlan on the line there, co-host of the Red 78 podcast. And you can get that wherever you pick up your podcasts. It's all things Munster. Quinny and Niamh Briggs picking through all the latest events, and available weekly as well. So the Red 78 podcast, worth your while going to check that out. It is 2 minutes past nine. We have a live crappy quiz upcoming in just a little bit. It'll be myself versus Phil versus Tommy.
Yep. Some lineup.
Is the weird round back?
Yeah.
Ugh, I really don't, I must be the only one, but I really don't enjoy it.
Nice.
Right, it is 2 minutes past nine, and we're going to turn our attention back to football now. Enda Carl, good morning to you. Oh, we'll be coming back to Enda in just a few moments' time. I was actually going to ask him off the top on Jack Byrne. We mentioned a bit earlier on that he's and Enda's there. How are you, Enda?
Hey lads, how's it going?
Jack Byrne is back in the game. This is we'll get into you've been crunching the numbers, and we'll do that in a second, but this could ultimately feed into that. Back in the game, and this could be a good thing for him, a good thing for Ireland.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. Like, he was very unlucky with the move to Halfwell and how it worked out for Mick McCarthy, because, I mean, how many stories can you write about footballers that have gone to a club just because the manager asked them to, and then that manager is sacked a couple of weeks later? So, I mean, he was one of the best players for Shamrock Rovers when he left. He'll be one of the best players for Shamrock Rovers when he comes back. It'll be interesting to see what it does for the shape of Shamrock Rovers, because there is only one space for a player like Jack Byrne in that team. So I wonder, is the Danny Mandrew to Celtic link sort of playing into that? Is that an agent already seeing the future for Danny Mandrew at the club and trying to get him a move already? But yeah, it bolsters a club that have been building over the last couple of years and are very much the dominant side. So I would say Shamrock Rovers were firm favourites to secure the title next year again. I would say this bolsters that even more.
All right, we'll watch it. You've been moneyballing the Republic of Ireland. Is that what's happened here?
Essentially, yeah. So, look, I know a lot of people don't buy into the whole idea of stats, and I agree in somewhat stats can be quite tedious or quite unimportant, really, if you break them down game by game. But basically what I've been doing is I've compared the 2018 campaign with Martin O'Neill and the 22 World Cup campaign with Stephen Kenny, and comparing how that sort of stacks up, where what the underlying numbers mean, and what essentially whether or not there is progress happening in this Kenny side, or if we're just being sort of fooled by the ideas that we all have in our own head, whether Stephen Kenny's doing badly or whether Stephen Kenny's doing good.
So you're going to save the conclusion of that, I presume, until you give us some of those numbers.
Well, yeah, so it's coming on Team 33 tonight. There'll be a piece on OTB Sports as well, sort of breaking down it. So you obviously have to take all these numbers for what they actually are. They're just numbers. You have to add context to it as well. So I'll run through the context for what the two campaigns, the difference between them are. So the format was different. Ireland were in a 16 group in 2018. They had 10 games. 22, Ireland were in a 5-team group, so they had 8 games. In the squad, 2018. So World Cup campaigns are weird because they run over like 2 years. So you start your campaign in 2016 for the World Cup in 2018. So when Ireland started that campaign, they had 15 Premier League players in their squad. When Ireland started this campaign, the 22 one, they had 11 Premier League players in their squad. So that's actually fallen down a good bit since the likes of Sheffield United have got relegated, since Conor Hourihan moved on to a different club. So Ireland have less than 11 players playing in the Premier League than they did when they started the campaign.
Have you? Are they playing players?
They are playing players. So all these players have played in the campaign. I haven't selected anybody that's in the squad that didn't get any game time. All those players are players that got game time throughout the campaign. So you actually have players who have dropped down from the Premier League, even into League One, from where they started in the campaign. So you have a whole moving sort of conveyor belt of players of where they're playing. But essentially, 15 against 11 at the start of the campaign were playing Premier League football. In the group stages is where you get into sort of the nitty-gritty. So Ireland were ranked 23rd when they started the World Cup campaign in 2018. Serbia, who were in their group, they were ranked 44th. They topped the group. And then Wales were ranked 12th because of how well they had done in the previous Euros. In this campaign, the 22 one, Ireland started 42nd in the world rankings. So that's 21 places behind, or 19 places behind. My math is not great. Portugal ranked 5th in the world, and Serbia ranked 3rd. Mm-hmm. So, or 30th, sorry. So that's where we're at in terms of the World Cup campaign and the context going into it. So do you want me to go through the numbers, or what do you want?
Yeah, give us a couple of numbers, and then like you want to be telling people to tune into Team 33 tonight, so don't give us everything, but give us a bit of a sense of it and a sense of some of the conclusions.
Right, so essentially what I'm trying to point out here is that if you look at one game, for example, and look at the amount of shots that Ireland have had, that's essentially meaningless in the long scheme of things, because you could have 12 shots and your XG, which is the measurement of the quality of those shots, could be at 0.4. So what you get there, if you draw your conclusion from that, is the Germany game, for example, that Ireland won. Ireland had barely any shots, but they scored one goal. So you can't draw a conclusion from that, because that's a one-off game that you're not going to repeat. So that's not something you can draw a conclusion from. This, all these numbers are an average from across the whole campaign. So this is where you can start to see whether or not things are starting to change, and you can put all these numbers together, and then you can gather the data together, and you can make your conclusion on whether things are actually changing. So the top line figures, I would say, is that things are changing, but not in the dramatic sense that we might imagine. So it is obvious that Ireland have tried to change their style, because their possession has gone way up. In 2018, the average possession was 38%, and in this campaign it was 43.5%. They have way more passes on average throughout the campaign in terms of their passing. They're getting into the box more. So in 2018, they had on average 18 box entries into the opposition box, 18 versus 24 in this campaign. And then long balls, this is where you're seeing the style of change. So in 2018 under Martin O'Neill, Ireland averaged 50 long balls per game, currently averaging 39.65 long balls per game.
It's not actually a drop big, it's not a huge drop off, is it? Like, it
no,
shows
exactly.
That we can mix it up when needs be.
Exactly. And you're looking at this, it's not the massive shift that you might imagine in terms of the style of play over the course of the campaign. So that's why it's so easy to get wrapped up in the fact that, oh, Ireland lost to Luxembourg, or they didn't do well against Serbia, or whatever. It's very easy to get lost in that. But if you take it on the whole campaign, Ireland have certainly not regressed under Stephen Kenny, with a club or a squad of players that have regressed in club quality. So they're definitely not going backwards under Stephen Kenny. So anybody who says that they are is actually patently wrong. The numbers are here to prove that. Secondly, there is sign that there's actual progression in terms of what they're trying to do. But like I said, it's not dramatic. It isn't the Stephen Kenny hasn't turned Ireland into prime Barcelona here, but he has turned them into a more passing team. He has turned them into a more progression based team. And the long term look at this is that if Ireland continue in the same way that they are, the underlying data is good. It's positive. It's not bad. So the natural conclusion from it is that Ireland will continue to progress, continue to improve under Stephen Kenny if and when he gets the new contract.
Yeah, we can win it, but win better, and is what you're saying here. It's
exactly.
Brian Clough style. And tune in tonight, 9 o'clock, I presume is the general message.
Yeah, 9 o'clock on Team 33. It'll be available on a podcast as well in the OTB Podcast Network, and there will be a piece explaining it all on OTB Sports as well. So all available in the OTB Sports app as well.
Good man. Thanks a million. End of crunching the numbers there. More detail on tonight, as you said, from 9 o'clock. Download the OTB Sports app to pick up Team 33. Much more of that detail, and also on otbsports.com. Some writing on that a little bit later on today. Here's what we've got coming up on OTB Sports Radio over the course of the day. 1 o'clock, The Life and Times of Johnny Caban. Friday Night Racing with Ger and Johnny and the lads from 3. Pat Fenlon, the subject of the League of Ireland Legend interview from Team 33 at 4. And then Emmanuel Petit, OTB Gold at 6. And Off the Ball back in your radio from 7 tonight. It is 11 minutes past 9. It's Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM. We are live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. We'll be having our mow ranking in just a little bit as well, this week's ranking. Joe will be making us all sweat for that in just a little bit. But up next, it's the crappy quiz.
OTB AM.
It is exactly 9:15. You'll have heard in the ads there, Cian Fahey and Ronan Mullen on the snap, brought to you in association with the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Aidan Callan on Twitter has been asking us, any idea when the 2022 college football tickets are on sale? Well, Aidan Callan on Twitter, pre-sale tickets available right now to the College Football Classic. It's Northwestern Wildcats against Nebraska Huskers. It's at the Aviva Stadium, August 27th of next year. You can sign up, by the way. The best way to keep on top of the updates around that and generally our American football coverage, sign up to our newsletter. It's at otbsports.com/clubgridiron for much more on all of that, and also in relation to the tickets for that game, which is what you've asked about specifically. Head yourself along to collegefootballireland.com. Much more details on all of that. Right now, time for the quiz. Chris Bond.
Oh, you're kidding me.
September.
Kyle Lafferty.
Are you joking me?
Is that right?
I know! Is that right?
Anybody else?
Leash, was it?
Like, that is one of the most stupid questions.
Darius Vassell? Seriously, you all need to just stay quiet. This is getting really annoying doing this quiz.
What is going on here?
Welcome, 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 welcome along to the shoutiest segment on Irish radio. It's the scintillating, it's the stupefying, it is the splendido crappy quiz. Every Friday we pit three of Team Off the Ball up against one another in our no-holds-barred quiz of sporting factoids at the end of the week. Allow me to welcome today's contestants. Our first contestant today enjoyed being at the Aviva Stadium last weekend, but not that much. Ireland were pretty great, but not that great. Despite what was happening in front of his eyes, he couldn't help but think, how would this Ireland team get on against possibly the greatest team in any sport ever? Indeed, we all had the thought, how would Ireland get on against the Pro 14 champions of 2017? Give it up for Adrian, who's your daddy, Barry?
Did we not see how they would get on against the greatest team of all time? It was Leinster in a green jersey, essentially, so...
The disrespect the facts, to the rest of us, the four proud provinces of no one, it turns out.
I was actually expecting you because I posted the picture I posted before the show. Tommy, good man, nodding there, you're with me here. I posted that exact wording absolutely deliberately.
Oh, did you? I didn't actually see your Twitter.
I didn't bite it.
I was expecting some sort of a nibble there, Tommy, which was to say a picture of the hacker saying, the greatest spectacle in sport?
Ah, right.
Possibly.
Possibly, is that what I said?
the algorithm doesn't push that content in my face, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Our next contestant today is hoping for a second consecutive Christmas without pubs being open. There is a genuine GAA man sitting on a bar stool in Meath Hill right now who has been sitting there waiting for this contestant for almost 2 years now, eagerly waiting for the opportunity to give this man grief for packing up his bags, leaving for Clare and leaving his dreams of a Meath Intermediate Club Championship behind. Give it up for the Meath, well, formerly the Meath Hillbilly, Tommy Rooney.
I'm still a hillbilly. Oh, and there's a corner in the barracks, which is the pub in Meath Hill, and it's called the Bullshit Corner. You'd fit in well there.
Oh! Go on.
Wow.
No, you just would. It's a lovely... You walk in the door, the barracks is a gorgeous little pub in Mead Hill.
Wow.
I don't know if you boys have ever been there before.
No.
It's on the road.
We've not been
Kings
there before.
Mead
Hill. Obviously not.
It's a beautiful red brick building. Lovely pub. A couple of little snugs around the corner. There's a wee room at the back of the pool table. Nice little bar. And just as you go in the right... the door on the right-hand side, when you get by the photograph of me on the wall, there's the bullshit corner.
Wow.
And what happens?
I'll bring you for a pint.
What happens? We might go in there actually and point at the photo of you, Tommy, and say to the lads in the barracks, "Have you seen this man?"
Is it a photograph of you, like in studio, or what are they proudest of? Is it you in studio, or are you in a jersey?
Oh, I'm in a jersey. I haven't seen it now in a wee while, like, but there's definitely one there at number 14 and Rooney on the back.
Well, you'll never be seen there again, to be honest. That photo's probably gone at this point. Just replaced with a photo of your dog or something like that. Our last contestant today swanned into the office.
Don't you say your dog. You had a photo with Bailey a few months ago. Don't you say that.
Oh, I'm like 100% being serious that your dog is like the would be an upgrade on the wall. It's a phenomenal photogenic dog. Shout out Bailey. Our last contestant today swanned into the office today like Bowden Barrett himself after a heap of pints at the Guinness storehouse. He looked across at his opponents and he knows exactly how this thing goes. He's confident, he's relentless, he's Phil the Power Egan.
It didn't really work out that well for Bowden Barrett, so a precursor of what's going to happen.
Get into him there, we'll be grand.
As ever, the format is a classic crappy quiz with a series of questions and a range of themes, and it's onto the slip and slide of trivia, which is the rapid fire round. You can podcast the crappy quiz on otbsports.com or on the OTB Sports app. And if you're watching on YouTube, a thumbs up would be great. Also, any questions you have, can you send them via postcard, please, to Crappy Quiz Quizmaster, Off the Ball Towers, Marconi House, Diggs Lane, Dublin 2. Round 1 is the boring questions round. It is never multiple choice. Adrian, question one for you. Six players have been in the match day 23 on all three occasions for Ireland in their wins against the All Blacks. Can you name four of them?
And the match day 23?
Yeah.
Cian Healy?
Yeah.
He didn't play in Chicago, I don't think. Okay. Peter Romani?
No, it's Tyke Furlong.
Josh Van der Fleer.
Josh Van der Fleer. Gary Ringrose.
Carberry was hardly there for all three.
Carberry was there for all three. Yeah.
Oh, he was.
And of course, Jonathan Sexton.
Sexton, I would tell I'd missed one of them.
What? AB.
That was poor Tommy, wasn't it?
Well, just I thought it was a banker for someone like yourself.
Yeah, it's a fair shout.
Tommy. Question one to you. Croke Park will next summer play host to Garth Brooks. Can he name the last artist to perform a full gig at the venue?
Here. What sort of a question is that?
Slightly different than the one I got.
Jeez, the last one I was at was Bruce Springsteen back in May 2016.
Seven Lennon to Kenny.
Good GEA question.
He opened up my favourite Bruce Springsteen song, by the way, which probably most of you probably don't know, Incident on 57th Street. There's
give us a bar of it there.
Version.
I'm not familiar with that one.
I'm not, but there's a 7-minute version live in Barcelona in 1993 that you should go check out when you get a chance. Last artist, it wasn't Atomic Kitten. wasn't.
Come on, think. What was on your Instagram 2019?
Don't be giving him any hints now, come on.
Wasn't Girls Aloud? Spice Girls?
Wasn't Spice Girls. Spice Girls were the penultimate act to play there. There was another.
Westlife?
It was Westlife. Oh. Spice Girls and Westlife played there in 2019. Westlife was the last one. Phil, question one for you. Who was the last full time Rangers manager before Steven Gerrard?
Who got this?
Okay. I think it was Pedro Caixinha.
Correct. Yeah. Phil Egan off to a good start.
I think.
The pints in the storehouse.
Yeah,
no,
that's right.
I think.
Round two is the who got the assist round. In this round, I'm going to give you a famous score and scorer from the sporting archives, and all you got to do is tell me who passed the ball to the player in question. Adrian, who passed the ball to Tommy Bowe for his try in the 2009 Grand Slam game against Wales? Iconic score, iconic commentary.
Give this one a bit of thought.
What do you think?
You hardly have to give this
the name, which is not my answer, Jojo, unless it's the right one, and then jump in. The name that's in my head is Luke Fitzgerald. So, you know, feel free to... I'm getting no indication from the box.
Your poker face has got better, Jojo.
Go on, Jojo.
Like, are we a timer going
yeah,
here?
Let's go with that. Luke Fitzgerald.
No, it's not Luke Fitzgerald's.
It's no Ronan O'Gara.
It is Ronan O'Gara. Tommy was right. It was an iconic score. He kicks the ball across the pitch.
Yeah.
Tommy ball!
Yeah. Tommy. Who passed the ball to Owen Mulligan for his goal against the Dubs in 05? Yeah, I think this is actually the hardest one of the three questions now in hindsight.
Well, they'll be giving him any hints now.
I don't think where the ball comes from.
But it's just Owen Mulligan makes the score himself, so like the assist actually isn't that.
Does it come from the sideline, Owen, under the canal end?
Well, you don't. Let's not worry about where it came from. There's no extra information.
That question that Tommy's asking, it's not going to help him one bit.
Was it Brian McGuigan?
It wasn't Brian McGuigan. It was Stephen O'Neill who passed him the ball. Phil, who passed the ball to Steven Gerrard when he scored against AC Milan to begin the comeback in the 2005 Champions League final?
Get out the door.
Specialist topic. I mean, this is on...
What?
Phil watches this game at least once a week.
That's outrageous.
It was a cross from the left from John Arnarisa.
Like, Phil has a still of every single second of that photograph of that game.
Sorry, guys. That was unfair.
What's going on?
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I'll put my hands up.
Pass it, Clive.
I'll put my hands
Clive
up.
Clive Tilsey. Hello.
Like, he needs absolutely no help this night.
That was favouritism for me.
Myself and Adrian should have got our questions right.
Yeah.
But, like, that was so easy.
Agreed. Round three is the Pass the Parcel of Doom round. It is time for another edition of the hottest new invention of 2021. You know the drill at this stage. I give you a category that involves a list of names, and all you got to do is give me a name that matches the list, and the Parcel of Doom passes on to the next contestant, who then also has to give me a name. We will keep moving through the list until one of you give me an incorrect answer, at which point that person will be eliminated. People have got really wound up about people getting deducted 1 point, so you'll be eliminated, and then the next person gets eliminated, and the person doesn't get eliminated gets rewarded 1 point because people just couldn't deal with the minus numbers.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Just goes to show the lack of broad thinking in this office that the minus numbers managed to throw
negative.
The entire quiz off.
Very negative.
I wasn't listening there. What's changed?
We'll bring you along, Tommy. We'll explain as we go.
If you could tune in there anytime soon, that'd be.
I was trying to get myself ready.
Adrian,
what?
Adrian, can you name a player who has scored a hat trick since the beginning of the 2020-21 season in the Premier League? So the beginning of last season to now, anyone who scored a Premier League hat-trick?
Son.
Son is correct. Next up is Tommy.
Oh my God. Salah.
Yeah. Phil.
Jamie Vardy.
Jamie Vardy is correct. Adrian.
Ronaldo.
No, you're...
He's going not in the Premier League.
Yeah, he scored twice in his debut, didn't he? But that was it.
Oh, that's disappointing.
You're eliminated. But good thing is you don't get deducted a point because it's so different now that we're not doing that.
Consolation on, but...
Tommy.
Harry Kane.
Harry Kane is not correct. Harry Kane has not scored a hat-trick since the start of last season, so Phil, to earn the point...
Oh, he has to complete
it. Oh, he has to. He does.
Yeah, let's do it because everybody has to.
Absolutely. We're playing off the hoop here, Phil. Oh, yeah. But I like it.
So I need to come up with somebody that has scored a hat trick.
I like that. That's a good suggestion.
How long did he get here? We had to go pretty quickly there.
Thanks,
Adrian. Stumbled into this, but
I'm going to go.
Spur shopping things.
Here, time.
I think Gabriel Jesus.
No, he bottled at the end, so nobody gets a point in that case. The list in
Aubameyang.
Aubameyang.
I was going to go for him before I went for Ronaldo.
Yeah, Aubameyang did score a hat-trick, even though he hasn't been great. Gareth Bale scored a hat-trick. Patrick Bamford. Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Bruno Fernandes. Roberto Firmino. Kelechi Iheanacho. Josh King. Riyad Mahrez. Mason Mount. Ferran Torres. Ollie Watkins. And Chris Wood. Along with the names that you've mentioned, have all scored hat-tricks since the beginning of last season. So what we're going to do is you will get the point if you've answered the same amount of questions as everybody else, or if you've given the same number of names. So that's why we came back
to
Phil there.
So we get a point each.
No one can score us there. Tommy, you'll start us off here. Can you name an All-Star Footballer of the Year since 2000?
Andy Moran.
Andy Moran is correct. Phil?
So Footballer of the Year?
Footballer, yeah.
Okay, Bernard Brogan.
Bernard Brogan is correct. Adrian.
Fenton.
Fenton, yep, twice. Tommy.
Michael Darren-McCauley.
Michael Darren-McCauley is correct.
Declan O'Sullivan.
No, Declan O'Sullivan did not win Footballer of the Year.
Well, that's a joke.
Oh, you know what? You're right.
Well, it could have. Yeah. Okay. My AB, just give up.
Galvin, yeah. Maybe he stole it from Declan. What was that? Donahue, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
Stole from Declan.
Phil.
No, Phil's gone.
Sorry, Adrian. Yeah. Just a reaction there. Head to head.
My name's hopping around now. Did he win it last year?
Do you know what I'd say? Tommy has all these on the back of his mind somewhere, so I'd say I'm toggling here,
but I'm going to go
for the football pod. I have a list of who to get.
I'll go with Lee Keegan.
Lee Keegan is correct.
Yes.
Tommy.
Does it include the year 2000?
Yeah.
Seamus Moynihan.
Correct. Adrian.
He's googled that. Yeah. I'm toggling between two Kerry names.
And we've actually named all the Kerry players.
Go with.
I gave it named ones that didn't get it.
Did he win it? No, I'm going to go with James.
James is a good shout. Yeah. Tommy.
Stephen O'Neill.
Stephen O'Neill is correct. Adrian, back to you.
You're ruining me here.
We've got you a lot of them, lads. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We're halfway through.
Only halfway through. Wow.
Well, actually, no. It's been what, 21 years? 20? Not 20 years, Stan.
Can I ask if somebody's been mentioned previously?
Yeah, go for it.
Colm Cooper.
Colm Cooper hasn't been mentioned previously.
Colm Cooper.
No, famously never won Footballer of the Year.
Oh, AB. Christ.
Tommy, you get the point because you've answered the same number of questions. But what would you have gone for next?
What would I have gone for next?
There's a load of obvious ones. I'll go through them.
I would have probably gone for 12 was
Cara Lacey. Yeah.
12 was Lacey.
No one mentioned.
I would have gone for Doher
never won it.
Clifford
did in a minute. Alan Brogan wasn't mentioned. Sean Kavanagh. Stephen Cluxton wasn't mentioned. Cara Lacey. Jack McCaffrey. Stephen McDonnell. Kieran McGeaney. Declan Meehan. Mark O'Shea. Tomás O'Shea. Go on.
What year was Cluxton again?
Cluxton was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
I was going to mention Cluxton. I thought famously he's never won it. There we go.
Where did you leave out Dermot Connolly?
Phil.
Oh, wow.
You're leading us off here. This one, I suspect, will be a hard one to get. Books that have been awarded the William Hill Sports Book of the Year Award since it was first given out in 1989.
Oh, my God. I can honestly say I may as well just walk out of the studio now because...
Those pints in the storehouse.
I do not read books.
Right. What do you do with your spare time?
I watch games.
You watch football?
I watch games. The Andy Lee one, what was that called again? Great book.
No. I mean, you just got
sorry, if you say Andy
no,
Lee.
No. He has to name the book.
Oh, Tommy, come on.
Let's
no. Fair is fair.
It doesn't matter anyway. It doesn't matter. It's incorrect. You're out.
Tommy, pipe down. I'm next.
Adrian, you're next.
Matt Hampson's Paul Kimmich book.
That is... What year was that again?
Like 10 years ago maybe.
Adrian, were you on the panel to do this before?
Not the William Hill book.
Not the William Hill. I just want to make sure that this is actually correct. I don't think that's... I don't think that's correct.
I mean, it is definitely correct.
That it won William Hill Sports Book of the Year.
I think I can actually even remember the photograph.
Well, you can Google there, can't you?
Yeah, but I'm going to just do a quick Control F here. No, Kimmage didn't win it twice.
With Samson.
Did you say win it twice?
Yeah.
Was that the question?
No. Sorry, Adrian, you're wrong. Sorry, you're wrong. It didn't. I'm looking for winners.
Why you gotta go here?
It didn't win it. It got shortlisted. Tommy. Oh,
for Christ's sake.
Tommy, take the point.
Back from the Brink, Paul McGrath, Vincent Hogan?
No. No.
Tony McCoy's bottom.
Nobody scores anything. We're done straight away.
Am I right about that?
So is Rough Ride in there?
Rough Ride was in there, yeah. But none of you got there.
Load of old bollocks, Tommy.
Very quickly, going to race through these from 89 all the way up to the current
day. You don't need to give us them all. Give us a.
Yeah, true. Rough Ride is on. Muhammad Ali is Life and Times. Thomas Hauser. Nick Hornby, Fever Pitch. Was in there. Football Against the Enemy was in there. A Good Walk Spoiled was in there. Dark Trade by Donald McRae was in there.
Back from the Brink, 2006 winner. What are you on about?
You're looking at the wrong Sportsbook Awards, Tommy, I suspect.
William Hill, Sportsbook of the Year, 2006.
2006, I'm saying Unforgivable Blackness, The Rise and Fall of Jack Johnson by Jeffrey Ward is the winner.
This question.
William Hill, Irish Sportsbook.
Are we talking about Irish sportsbooks, lads?
No, we're not. We're talking about the William Hill Sportsbook of the year.
Oh, no, he knows he's on shaky ground.
The William
You're
Hill
joking. Sportsbook. You and I were both in there, Tommy. We both.
Tommy,
you're joking, Owen.
We should
Tommy,
both get a point.
Tommy.
You never said Irish. You never.
Yeah, I didn't say Irish.
It would have been specified.
That's
that
the whole
Irish.
Point. I didn't say Irish. The William Hill Sportsbook of the Year is the UK one which Irish books have entered and won in the past. It is the peak of the sportsbook industry awards. And
Tommy and myself should have got a point there anyway.
No, you shouldn't. It was just it was an unforgivable lack of knowledge
of
your own subject. Round four is the fun free magic number round. Contestants get
What's
3 points for getting the number exactly right. It's Phil 2, Tommy 1, Adrian 0. If no one manages that, the nearest contestant who doesn't go bust gets 2 points. The second closest gets 1 point. I can only accept the answer that's written on your paper, and I'm also going to ask for your pens once the music ends. So if you don't mind, give us the following number. The number of managers that have already lost their jobs this Premier League season, plus the number of senior goals Chidoze Agbene has scored for the Republic of Ireland, plus the number of goals the Republic of Ireland conceded in their 2022 World Cup qualification campaign, plus the number of drivers' championships won by Lewis Hamilton so far in his career. Your 30 seconds expire when Sinatra sings Bright Shiny Beads. So, the number of Premier League managers that have already lost their job this season, plus the number of senior goals that Benny has scored for Ireland, the number of goals Ireland conceded in their World Cup qualification campaign, and how many Formula 1 drivers' championships has Lewis Hamilton won. Add them all up. What do you get? Bubbles, bangles, bright shiny. Tommy, we'll go to you first here.
20.
Phil?
22.
Adrian?
28.
The answer is 22. Phil Egan, 3 points. That's how he does it, you know. Yeah. That's how he does it. Take us through this, Phil. The number of managers that have lost their jobs in the Premier League?
Five.
Munoz, Bruce, Nuno, Farke, Smith. Ogbeni scored how many goals?
Two.
Yeah. How many goals did Ireland concede?
Eight.
And
Eight.
Lewis Hamilton?
Seven.
There you go, 22. Phil Egan on 5, Tommy on 1, Adrian on 0. This is a story as old as time. Our winner tonight will be decided in the round that separates the men from the boys, the Jason Knights from the Jason Stathams. It's a no theme in particular, ridiculously easy rapid fire round. The score you get in this round will be added to your score in the previous round. There will be 40 seconds for everyone to answer from the same set of questions. If you get a question correct, I'll keep asking you a question. That's you, Phil, at the start, and then on to Tommy, and then on to Adrian, and I'll deduct you a point and move on to the next person if you get one wrong. So, Phil Egan, are you ready?
Yep.
Your 40 seconds starts now. Where will Euro 2024 take place?
Germany.
Correct. What club does Lee Keegan play for?
Castlebar. Or Westport.
Tommy, who knocked Bowes out of Europe this season? Who knocked Bowes out of Europe this season?
Did a lunch.
Pau. Who managed the Irish women's national team before Vera Pau, Adrian?
Bell.
Correct. Who stepped down as Currafin senior manager this week?
Park Joyce.
No, Kevin O'Brien. Andy Carroll has signed a short-term deal with which club, Phil?
Reading.
Correct. In what year will Ireland co-host the T20 Cricket World Cup?
2030.
Correct. Who did Cork beat in this year's All-Ireland hurling semi-final?
Kilkenny.
Correct. Eileen Gleeson left Ireland to take charge of which club?
Glasgow City.
Absolutely. Phil, you get to 9, and that is one hell of a score. Phil Egan is this week's Crappy Quiz champion. What do you have to say for yourself?
I'm sorry, Lee. I'm sorry. I know you play for Westport.
Say, Phil, that's close to home.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well done, Phil.
Yeah, so that was good.
He's not even getting enjoyment out of this anymore. He's too.
He's like Brian Fenton earlier on. He's like he's going to turn up at the primary schools around the country, around Mayo after this, and they'll just be like, "Yeah, whatever, Phil."
I'm already even thinking of the next one.
If you see this man, do not let him. The one thing is, though, Phil, you need to put your money where your mouth is now and actually hammer home this by winning the big fat crappy quiz of the year, big crappy quiz of the year, which is coming to you during Christmas week. It would be a bottle job on your part for you to
the worry
be on this
there
run
is,
and not delivering that. So we'll see how that goes next month.
You could fatigue.
We gotta go, boys.
I'm peaking right now. Like,
yeah.
That's my worry. The Christmas period is very busy.
You're coming back.
That's it. Thanks for joining us on the crappy quiz.
Beauty of having Chris Martin.
Oh, you're kidding me. September.
Kyle Lafferty.
Are you joking me?
Is that right?
I know! Is that right?
Anybody else? Leash, was it?
Like, that is one of the most stupid questions.
Darius Vassell? Seriously, you all need to just stay quiet. This is getting really annoying doing this quiz.
What is going on here?
Yeah. Another shambolic quiz for you. And inevitable outcome. It is 9.39 almost on this Friday morning. Joe's going to join us on the line in a minute to give us his ranking of Moe's. Joe, how are you getting on?
Morning, Adrian. No good. How are you getting on?
You're still the most impressive Moe in town, of course.
I don't know. It's heating up.
No,
it's definitely heating up.
You're putting us to shame, Joe. I suggest that, you know, you shave yours off to make the rest of it look a bit better. What have you got for us this week?
Just quickly, in terms of putting people to shame, we've got two from the rugby archive here. We've got a tasty number from 2007, oof, Jordan Murphy.
Beauty.
He really embraced this. This was kind of probably the first year that Movember started kind of blowing up here. I think he came back to the RDS as well with Leicester. It just looks like he's hacked into a beard there, but like, it's a thing of beauty. It's kind of, we're getting trucker vibes. We're getting like Irish blues man, could have been sort of stablemates of Rory Gallagher or someone. We're getting Gangs of New York vibes, a lot in there. High complexity level here, great stuff. We've got one more from the archive, more recent. Jamie Heaslip, one of the early ambassadors of Movember in Ireland. Again, tidy work here. We've got pencil bar in the upper lip, just a little puff below the lower lip. Kind of World War One officer mixed with Zorro here. So very strong stuff, but it's obviously the main event this morning. The preamble is out of the way. We're going on to the official week two of the Off the Ball Movember power rankings here. In a tree, it's still Mr. Controversy. It's still Ger Gilroy.
What's we've happened, kind of,
in what's happening in what sense? The conversation here has kind of moved on. Well, the conversation here has moved on from kind of disgrace to sort of he's back. He's sort of, he's that disgraced boxer putting a few wins together. Where the people are kind of talking about, you know, how much should his cheating mar his legacy? See, either kind of he can't shake off the bad smell, or else he's kind of popping up doing in studio analysis somewhere or kind of in a big fight and we're going, Jesus, isn't that guy serve a dope fans? Like, not sure, probably not. Looks pretty legit to me. There's an interesting cluster going on here at the extremities. We're not sure where that's going. That could be his kind of backdoor back into this race. If he's got something special up his sleeve here, you know, he could win out this week. I do expect to be moving week as well in the rankings. So, you know, we'll reconvene in 7 days, but
well, I think, you know, I thought, Joe, I thought the big thing with Joe was that he was going for Salvador Dali, and that seems to have now been abandoned.
I think now, well, watch his face, but it seems as if rather than growing the size and twirling them, it seems as if he's going to literally grow the shape of the Dali.
As opposed to just grow the shape of it.
So, and you know, if he can pull like that off, there's a road back here, so we'll like watch that space. Going up, we've got moving up the top, number two this oof week. It's on Sheehan, it's the classic, it's the Mo Next Door.
Me and, you know, JD again.
Mo Next Door.
Mo Next Door, I like it. I'm disappointed with that.
Well, you know, we'll see you next week, fans.
You know, screw you, Joe. I'm coming out. This is like, I finally feel Dublin's payment. They're finally moved off the top of the power rankings in the summer. It's not a nice feeling.
Well, and we like that to talk. We're just saying, you know, what else you got? What's coming next week? So we'll leave that with you. But there's only room for one at the top, and it is the only mountain this morning.
Yeah.
It's Adrian Barry. Okay. We asked for more last week. It was kind of like week one of Strictly.
I've been beaten by that.
Week one of Strictly, it was kind of like the wooden MP asked to kind of go away and loosen up and work on their footwork and kind of bring us back something exciting next week. He's making it pop. To be honest, it was neck and neck this morning, but there was an image sent in from Jojo in the box that really cemented for me. I didn't get revealed.
That is worrying. That is,
oh my god, that
worrying
actually works. Jesus Christ. That is
good,
terrifying.
Good hearing, don't I?
But, oh my
I mean,
god,
you can't argue with wow that. I mean, fresh from intervening in a fight at his local under 13's GAA match, it's Adrian Barry with the Mo of the Week. So
Joe. I mean, I was with you all the way up to the last 5 seconds there.
That will
haunt. Listen, I'll take my win, Adrian Exotic. I'll take my win. Come on, Joe. Well
exactly
done.
The Mo Exotic.
Top rankings is always good, man, and it's all a bit of fun, and it's all with thanks to our partners Gillette, who are proud sponsors of Movember. You can head along to movember.ie. You don't have to just make it easy to yourself by growing one of these things, or growing the shape of one of these things, it turns out, in Joe Gilroy's case, but you can get involved. You can go and do some exercise. Loads of resources up on movember.ie if you want to go up and check out. It's all about men's mental health, and it's all about us keeping the conversation going about that. I know the lads had a very interesting chat last weekend about the entire topic. Emmett Brennan was one of the contributors to that, and there'll be more to come as well over the course of November. But as I said, it's all with thanks to Gillette, and you can check out movember.ie for much more on all of that. You have been watching OTB AM. We're with you until 10 this morning. By the way, a reminder that you can subscribe to the OTB AM podcast feed. You can catch everything back from the show. The easiest place to do that is the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.